KNIC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein is straight ahead. It's 12 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 46 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the 17 John Elway Showrooms. President Bush is expected to arrive at Fort Carson shortly. Bruce Martin has the details.
The president will fly into Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs. From there, it's on to nearby Fort Carson, where he's scheduled to make a few remarks and meet with families of troops who are serving in Iraq. Major fighting ended in May, but since then, some 27 soldiers from Fort Carson have died in the Middle East. Nearly 12,000 troops from the base are in Iraq. Just last month, Fort Carson was visited by Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Bruce Morton, Fort Carson, Colorado.
A security guard from a Denver King Supers is still in serious condition after he was shot about midnight Saturday during an attempted robbery. 52-year-old Kareem Al-Subi was standing behind a counter at King Supers at 13th and Cremaria when a suspect tried to rob the store. A surveillance tape shows the suspect pulling a gun, which Al-Subi tried to grab. The suspect shot the gun multiple times and then ran from the store. The description of the suspect is somewhat sketchy. He's only described as black, 5 feet 8 inches tall, and appeared to be in his 20s. More Colorado Army reservists are headed to Iraq. There are more than 50 Army medics who will join Operation Iraqi Freedom for about a year and a half. First stop in a couple of weeks will be Fort Carson near Colorado Springs for training for 7 to 12 weeks, followed by deployment to Iraq. They'll be able to spend Thanksgiving with their families, and they hope to get leave during training for a Christmas visit home, too. The holiday spirit has hit the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office as they work to help some of their own. Some department employees have major financial needs due to family deaths or other family illnesses, so the department is helping with a spaghetti dinner and auction tonight at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds Auditorium. Sheriff's spokesman Jim Shires says several families connected to the department are in need, and many of them don't know they're going to be on the receiving end of the benefit. The event goes from 4:30 this afternoon to late tonight. Information available from Judy Searle at 303-271-5665. A jury has recommended John Allen Muhammad be put to death for the murder of a Maryland man during last fall's D.C. area sniper shooting spree. Bob Myers, the brother of victim Dean Myers, believes justice has been served.
I do not revel in the decision. It is a weighty one. It is not taken lightly from this side of the desk. But I do believe that it is a decision on the sentence that is right and proper.
The Virginia Beach jury gave Muhammad the death penalty for murder and an additional death penalty for violating a new anti-terrorism law enacted after the September 11th attacks. Muhammad was also given 10 years for conspiracy to commit murder and 3 years for firearms violation. He showed no emotion as the verdict was read and shook his lawyer's hand afterwards. The lead prosecutor in the case calls the verdict, quote, a victory for society. Senate supporters of a Medicare reform package have mustered the necessary votes to end a filibuster and move the controversial legislation to a final vote. Debate will now be limited to no more than 30 hours. With a strong push from President Bush, the House passed the nearly $400 billion measure in the pre-dawn hours on Saturday. Meanwhile, the president has signed a $401 billion annual defense spending bill. In a signing ceremony at the Pentagon, the president called this, quote, a time of conflict and challenge, and said the nation stands with the U.S. military.
Right now, America's armed forces are the best trained, best equipped, and best prepared in the world. And this administration will keep it that way.
In an earlier speech, Bush noted the loss of U.S. servicemen overseas. On the eve of Thanksgiving, he said the nation is thinking of the military families that have suffered loss in Iraq and Afghanistan. Pop icon Michael Jackson says the child molestation charges against him are a big lie. Jackson has put up a website to serve as his official outlet as he defends himself against the accusations. He was booked last week on the charges. Meantime, actress Elizabeth Taylor says Jackson is innocent. The screen legend accuses the media of bashing the singer before all the facts have come out. In sports, being the favorite doesn't always help, as the Denver Broncos found out yesterday. The Broncos lost 19-10 to the Chicago Bears. Denver wide receiver Ed McCaffrey says they have to put this loss behind them and be ready for the next game.
There's a whole lot of different things that went out there today, and you know, we'll look at the film and try to correct it. But the main thing is that we don't give up hope. We keep working hard and do everything we possibly can to get better and to win. And you know, it's disappointing. game, but it's over now. We have to worry about next week.
Next week, the Broncos will be in Oakland to play the Raiders. Colorado Avalanche wrap up their five-game homestand tonight against the Nashville Predators. Avs lost 2-0 to the LA Kings on Saturday night. Denver Nuggets have the night off as they get ready to play the Phoenix Suns tomorrow night at the Pepsi Center. Do you want out of high car payments? Then the John Elway showrooms want to swap cars with you. You could end up making lower payments than you have now. Swap cars and let John Elway take your old car and lower your monthly payments. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
What's all the buzz in the suburbs? Find out by subscribing to Buzz in the Burbs magazine. If you're looking for all the best places to eat, shop, travel, and have fun with the family, you'll find it in Buzz in the Burbs, the original lifestyle magazine for Denver suburbs. Buzz in the Burbs is a terrific resource with a wealth of information on fashion, food, home, travel, health, education, local events, personalities, and more. Best of all, you can get the buzz delivered right to your door. If you're not on the mailing list, call Buzz in the Burbs at 303-689-7665 or visit www.buzzintheburbs.com now to subscribe. For just over $1 a month, you get all the buzz about your suburban community right in your mailbox every month. 40,000 active, affluent families rely on Buzz in the Burbs for great ideas on family living. For advertising information or to subscribe, call 303-689-7665 or check out the buzz on the web at www.buzzintheburbs.com. Call 303-689-7665 today.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Kohl's, and we're cleaning up a couple accidents, Alameda and Santa Fe, as well as northbound I-25 at University. Watch for delays on University at I-25. 11th and Broadway, an accident involving a pedestrian. And we do have an accident with a light rail and a car at Colfax and Spear. That'll be a real problem. Get to Kohl's after Thanksgiving sale at 5:30 a.m. this Friday morning and receive a $10 reward for every $50 in purchases. See store for details. Kohl's, give happy, get happy. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Becoming partly cloudy this afternoon, high temperatures around 45, dropping down to a chilly 18 tonight under a partly cloudy sky, and it will be partly cloudy and a little breezy on Tuesday with a high near 40. Now, if you're heading out for the holiday on Wednesday, it's going to be partly cloudy and breezy. Winds will be coming in from the west, but it looks like a decent travel day with a high of 41. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 44 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Monday edition, of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Later in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by English novelist Martin Amis. His new book is called Yellow Dog. He is a very important English writer, and he's going to be at Tattered Cover at Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. So he'll be joining us in the next hour. We have a lot to talk about. Clive Cussler will be joining us early in December. Everybody's getting ready for Thanksgiving. Wasn't the snow wonderful, particularly if you didn't have to go out in it? I did go out in it on Saturday. Some friends picked me up for lunch. Actually, a cousin of mine and her husband picked me up for lunch. And good thing they had a four-wheel drive vehicle. Traffic was horrible. We drove out to Cherry Creek. And it was, I don't know why, whether there were, I guess there were just tons of accidents all over the weekend because of the driving conditions. So I hope that you weren't in one of them. But it was really, if you could stay inside, I just think it's a picture postcard. I just thought it was great. So, having lived in California for so long, I'm really loving the snow. And I see that it's pretty melted and probably will be gone, but 18 degrees tonight, so keep nice and warm. And be careful if you're driving, because it's not all gone yet. I'm going to be gone for Thanksgiving, and people are going to be filling in for me on Wednesday. Arnie Grossman's going to be filling in for me. Thursday, we're all going to be doing Best Of's show, so some of our best interviews are going to be reprised for the Thursday show. And on Friday, Jerome Davis will be in for me. So just to let you know what's going on this week and what the schedule is. I want to get started because I wanted to tell you that I went out to the Jack Kerouac thing yesterday that Dana Croft hosted. It was so much fun. Dennis Gallagher was there. Everybody was there, and everybody was reading about Jack Kerouac. And one of his old friends who actually lives in Denver, who had a different name in On the Road, Jack Kerouac gave him a different name, but he was there sharing reminiscences of Jack Kerouac. The food was terrific. Julie Holmes did a great job. So it was a lot of fun. That was great. I want to get started because I have just tons to talk about today. So where to begin? First of all, let's just begin with things that I've been noticing. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but the Denver Post has been doing some really wonderful reporting on if you are a woman in the military, either the wife of a military man or yourself in the military, if there's been any sexual problems, any sexual assaults and so on, forget it. You become a second-class citizen. They don't do proper investigations. And this is a 9-month investigation that the Denver Post has undertaken. And it is beginning to attract a lot of attention. It came to Senator Warner's attention in the Senate, and he is conducting investigations about it. So it's not unlike the Air Force Academy scandal, where women were clearly not wanted and second-class citizens and dealt with very unfairly. It turns out that women in the military and the wives of men in the military get the same kind of treatment. So that's a fabulous piece of work that the Post is doing. However, its brand new section, its brand new style section, has gone from bad to worse. I thought that when the first day it launched, it's like a restaurant. You don't want to go to a restaurant the minute it opens. You want to, if you're a reviewer particularly, you want to give the restaurant time to work the kinks out of the system, and I'm sure that the style section will get lots better. It has gotten lots worse. The photography is dreadful, at least this week's, the opening cover. It looks, when you get your newspaper, it's folded in half. And the important stories are what are called above the fold, I think. Well, above the fold, the picture was so indistinct. It was meant to be arty, but it's just bad. It's just bad photography, out of focus, and you don't know what it is, and it didn't print well. And it looks like an advertising section. I just about tossed it out. It's really ugly. The graphics are terrible. And that's in the first page, okay? Then underneath you realize, it's the style section. It's not an advertising supplement. And then it says host it, toast it, post it. What's in host it? Cool coasters? Is that really that interesting? They put the horoscopes big. And then they got a whole one-page thing on coasters, cool coaster. You know, the kind that you put under your glass, under your drinks? It's like, is this worth a whole page? And then some appetizing recipes from the Junior League of Denver, and a few little recipes in there, and then potato chip, white or blowout, best. Oh, really? And drive by and grab market goodies, so where to go get some stuff where you can buy it. And a restaurant, even if, a restaurant to go to, even if your palate exceeds your paycheck, and party panic. Really, meanwhile, a lot of ads. And then big spread in color on what to wear for the holidays, fancy clothes for the holidays. And then it's just something about a store in Golden, artsy, rural, and shabby chic. And then a whole page on Dear Abby, the remnants of Dear Ann, and Joanne Davidson's column, and then some appetizers. I mean, it's depressing. It's very badly done. There's nothing edgy. The writing's not clever. There's nothing there that's provocative and stimulating. I don't have a problem with cool coasters, and I don't have a problem with recipes, and I don't have a problem with where you go for dinner and how you can find cheap eats. I don't have a problem with any of that stuff, but it is so thin. There is no style to this thing at all. It is badly named. The graphics are terrible. I am amazed. So any of you who saw the style section, I think it ought to be called style less, because it's a style-free zone as far as I can determine, and it is embarrassing. It's really low rent. There's nothing, as I say, the book reviews have gone to another section. There are no provocative essays. There's not even any hot writing, really, that I can tell. It's just serviceable. It's just typical newspaper prose. I don't mean to down the writers, but it's really not worth your time. There's not much in there. It's real thin. Party panic? Let's see. Here's somebody who invented party in a box. Okay, relax. Planning kits take the anxiety out and let you throw a better bash. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I like that potato chip. White or blowout best. Give thanks for the broad choices. All those turkey frying, potato chip. Oh, my God. White or blowout best. Well, it's about wine, I guess. So Maybe what goes, I don't know, I didn't read it. What goes with potato chips? Who knows? The headline was not sufficiently enticing for me to actually get my, motate myself into that particular story, particularly since on Sundays, on my doorstep are dropped 50 million pounds of newspaper. I have got to get through the New York Times, the Denver paper, and anything else I can, that is there. And it takes up a good, more than a day to do that so that I can be on top of things for you. Boys and girls and buckaroos. So when I see a headline that doesn't bring me in at all, I don't bother with it. I think the style section is an embarrassment. What do you think? Have you seen it? Does it even? I bet it doesn't even dent your consciousness. Those of you who are Denver Post Sunday readers and the circulation on the Sunday Post, because it's a combination Post Rocky, I think is a pretty good circulation, probably over a million. What did I see? Maybe 1.4 million? Do I have that right? Close to a million? Something like that. 303-382-1150. Embarrassing. Embarrassing. You should demand better because the Post is capable of more. Okay, Tabloid Watch. First of all, Rush, who is back. Rush is, he's back wailing. But he has waggled his finger in front of the National Enquirer. Well, they have a rebuttal for him. Here he is. He's back on the airwaves. He told his listeners, it's quite hilarious to listen to people quote the National Enquirer as the world's foremost authority. And I'm here to tell you that they're not. What you know, what you think you know, you don't know. Don't make the National Enquirer the authority on this story. So the National Enquirer responds, we reported, reports the National Enquirer, that Limbaugh bought tens of thousands of pills from the housekeeper. And by the way, she paid for them. He was in debt to her. You know, and now he's being investigated on money laundering issues because you can't withdraw more than $10,000 in cash without paperwork going to the government. So he would structure the deposits at like $9,900. I also heard $9,999, something like that, to avoid the paperwork, to avoid the scrutiny. But the law also reads, and I really actually think this is a very unfair law, even though it's catching Rush in its maws. The law also reads that if you are structuring your withdrawals to be under the 10,000 limit in order to evade federal law, they'll still haul you off to the pokey, so you can't win. So he is being investigated. I think Florida is investigating him. Anyway, the National Enquirer is responding to Limbaugh's blather by saying that we reported that Limbaugh bought tens of thousands of pills from the housekeeper at his Palm Beach mansion. The details of the Enquirer's scoop were later confirmed by other top news organizations across the country. Sources say that Rush's housekeeper was not the only person supplying him with narcotics, and he remains part of a drug probe in Palm Beach County, which has led to two arrests thus far. The investigation is ongoing, and more arrests are possible. A law enforcement source familiar with the investigation told the Enquirer, Rush may be out of rehab, but he isn't out of the woods yet as far as cops are concerned. Rush has admitted his addiction to prescription drugs, but the thing to remember is this. He didn't have a prescription. And it says, the New Yorker is reporting, actually under federal law, there is no distinction between OxyContin, Limbaugh's reported pill of choice, and drugs like cocaine, methadone, and opiates. All are Schedule II drugs, which have medical uses but a high potential for abuse. And simple possession of any of them is punishable by up to a year's imprisonment. So if you don't have a prescription for it, now this is the New Yorker reporting this, a very different publication from the National Enquirer. If you are in unlawful possession of any of them, it's punishable by a year's imprisonment. Though Limbaugh may well have been introduced to painkillers via a doctor's prescription, the suggestion that he became addicted to them under a doctor's care is almost certainly false. So is the suggestion that he wasn't taking them recreationally, that is to get high. Where is that line? Of course he was taking them to get high. I mean, he was taking them to feel better. So where is that line between relieving physical pain and just feeling mellow? If you are a Limbaugh listener, probably you're over there getting your daily catechism. But if you are a Limbaugh listener and you find that he's taking these drugs recreationally, does that alter your view of him in any way, shape, or form? In other words, people who are his audience, his conservative audience, they're so happy to have a standard bearer who has become so successful that I think they'll forgive him anything. They will forgive him all kinds of things that they would never have forgiven anybody else. Anyway, the prescribed dose of OxyContin, one tablet every 12 hours, is usually sufficient to relieve any severe pain. The National Enquirer has Limbaugh purchasing nearly 12,000 OxyContins during a four-month period in 2001. 12,000 pills in a four-month period, enough to soothe his back troubles for 16 years. Limbaugh's current sojourn in drug treatment is his third. And you know what that would do for him in California? Three strikes, you're out. You're in prison for the rest of your life. Three strikes, you're out. Well, that's if he went to the criminal justice system twice before. But that he would be a three strikes kind of a guy. Look at it. Look at the guys on death row, the folks on death row. Look at the people in jail for long, disproportionately black, disproportionately poor. Rich people are not sitting on death row. Rich people are not in the slam for a zillion years at a time because they always have fancy representation. Even that Durst guy in Texas who admitted to chainsawing up his across-the-hall neighbor, he didn't get the death penalty. They acquitted him. 303-382-1150. It's another argument for why you don't even want to consider the death penalty because it's not equally applied. Anyway, if Rush had to go through the criminal justice system, this would have been his third strike. Would you like to comment? Also, Kobe. Turns out the accuser, the tabs are full of her for two reasons. She's, too, alleged to be in rehab at the same place, according to the tabs, where Rush just checked himself out of. She's in there apparently for booze. She checks into rehab on a, I saw her drinking and doing pot on the same night, says a purported friend. Anyway, she was a party girl, and allegedly she's been checked into rehab because of booze and drugs, the same rehab center called the Meadows. It's in Arizona where Rush was incarcerated. Here's Kobe. This is Kobe's accuser, allegedly in rehab. Now, it turns out, this is a copyrighted story, and the Globe is copywriting this story. Apparently, the most reputable, solid voices against Kobe, the bellhop. Remember the bellhop? Remember that the woman who was accusing Kobe, it was a concierge. And then after she had her whatever you want to call it with Kobe, and she came down, she obviously looked disheveled, disoriented, and she was greeted by the bellhop, and he gave her a ride home. And he's supposed to be a really solid kid, a really great kid. And his testimony is thought to would have been very damaging. Well, here is what the tabloid The Globe is reporting. New bombshell. That this bellhop, the star witness, the district attorney's star witness, had engaged in a sexual relationship with Kobe's accuser only a week before the alleged rape took place. He was supposed to be a dynamite witness for the prosecution, but if it's true that Bobby had sex with this young woman, then he's been put in a terrible position. It would lead to questions about his credibility on this very delicate subject. So, according to the Globe, and they've copyrighted the story, which means they feel like they're on solid ground, he's got, everybody just loves this kid. He's in his senior year at college, majoring in that most intellectual of courses, exercise science. And he hopes one day to coach a college basketball team. But Pamela Mackey, who is Kobe's attorney, has raised the idea that the woman in question has had multiple consensual sex partners in the days before she encountered Kobe. And, in fact, there seems to be some indication, or at least the allegations are, that she had a sexual relationship with the bellhop who was going to be the star witness only a week before the alleged rape took place. So stay tuned. More coming as the Kobe case continues, and the tabs are also reporting Mark Yargos, who you know is defending Michael Jackson on these child molestation charges. He's also representing Lacey Peterson's husband, Scott Peterson. The tabloids are filled with the story that not only did Scott Peterson have other girlfriends, but one of them was actually a friend of Lacey's. So there you go. All the gossip that's fit to print. 303-382-1150. I'm Nina Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Being independently owned means we're working for you instead of a corporation. That's a good thing. Local radio, AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett, and I'm inviting you to get your holiday cheer from Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, located at 12th and Broadway. I'm working on that Thanksgiving menu right now, and Brenda Francis from Golden Triangle is here with me to help out. Brenda, how are you?
I'm great, Doug.
Okay, what's the best wine choice to go with that Thanksgiving meal?
Well, you've got a lot of options. Rieslings and Gewurztraminers are great. So are Pinot Blancs and Pinot Gris. Areas like Alsace in Germany produce wonderful wines that would go just excellent with turkey. These wines are delicate, they're floral, they're got apricot flavors and peach flavors. They just complement turkey so well.
Wow, Brenda, I had no idea I had that many choices.
Well, if you come on in, our staff can find the perfect bottle for your Thanksgiving meal.
It's convenient, 12th and Broadway downtown. Golden Triangle is not only your personal wine cellar on the drive home, but they have everything else as well. You'll get a 10% discount off wines if you tell them you heard it here on KNRC.
Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, where variety, pricing, and convenience intersect at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Open Thanksgiving Day. Call 303-893-8436.
How would you like to spend your next vacation with Brad Paisley, Bill Anderson, Little Jimmy Dickens, and Ricky Skaggs? Come along with the Grand Ole Opry. The Opry Cruise is sailing to Grand Cayman, Cozumel, and other destinations in the Caribbean this January, and you can be aboard, courtesy of Banquet Home Style Banks. Just visit www.countrystars.com for more information. That's www.countrystars.com. Brought to you by America's favorite meal, Banquet Home Style Banks.
Honey, why are you wallpapering? Hmm? I thought you needed to fix the lawnmower and a bunch of other stuff around here.
This isn't wallpaper. I'm just hanging up my to-do list.
Have a lot on your list? Sears can get you through it more quickly by offering easy access to over 4.5 million parts. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME, click on Sears.com, or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find the right part for all major brands of lawn equipment and home appliances, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Good life, great price.
Kick off the holidays by attending the Art Reach Festival of Trees, November 15th through 30th at the Wildlife Experience. Presented by RE/MAX International, 2003 marks the 25th year of this landmark Denver holiday event, featuring gorgeous trees, wreaths, and decorations. Admission is only $6 for adults, $5 for seniors, and $3 for kids. And all proceeds benefit Art Reach, a Colorado nonprofit changing lives through the arts. For information on the 2003 Festival of Trees, go to artreachdenver.org.
I am addicted to prescription pain medication. Over the past several years, I've tried to break my dependence on pain pills, and in fact, I've twice checked myself into medical facilities in an attempt to do so.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1226 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and only today and tomorrow I'll be gone from Wednesday on doing Thanksgiving. So Arnie Grossman will be in for me on Wednesday, and on Friday Jerome Davis will be in for me. And Thursday we're all going to be doing Best Ofs. So some of our best shows will be reprised, some of my author interviews. I think Deepak Chopra, Ann Garrels, and who's the third person? Do you remember? And Judy Collins? Judy Collins, Deepak Chopra, and Ann Garrels. Okay, three wonderful interviews. Thanks, Joe, for putting that together. I want to, you just heard Rush saying that, talking about his drug problem, three strikes and you're out in some places, and this is his third. This is his third attempt at rehab. We'll just see what happens. Plus, there's going to be some, he's going to have his brushes with the legal system. I want to talk about, also, well, here's what we've been talking about, and you can comment. That style section of the Denver Post, it's just awful. It is embarrassingly bad. I'm sorry. It's not even thin. It's under thin. It's anorexic, that style section. And, hardly stylish at all, not stylish in the least. It just looks like a throwaway. I'm really surprised. That's number one. Number two, we're talking about Rush. We're talking also about the guest we're going to have here just in a little bit, Martin Amis, who's written a new book called Yellow Dog. And we're talking about Kobe, and we'll get into Michael Jackson, and we got lots cooking. But I want to go into something that's more serious right now. Right this very second, in the Senate, they're having a Medicare debate. Turning to pricing of drug benefits, and at issue is the government's role here. This is so bad. I don't even know how to begin with this. The government, in every other aspect, is able to exercise its huge buying power in order to get the best prices. You would expect that. The big companies are always able to do that. The government is able to do that. Your public library is able to do it wherever it can, and so on. This bill, this Medicare bill that AARP sold out seniors on, this bill will prevent the government from using its bargaining power, which it already does in a number of other ways, for getting better deals from the drug companies, because it is pork barrel medicine. They gave a little bit of a crumb to some of the poorest of seniors, but the rest of it is pork barrel medicine. It passed very narrowly by the in the House, and in the Senate, it looked like it was going to be a lot narrower, but some Democrats, some conservative Republicans are very angry about this. They don't want to see this happen. So they are not in favor of supporting their fellow Republicans, but some Democrats have crossed over to join the Republicans. Senator Dianne Feinstein is one of them. Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon is another one of them. And I am just dismayed. It gives some very impoverished seniors a little bit of a drug benefit, but it is a Trojan horse that undermines the system. And my feeling is you are better off waiting a little bit longer. It's not going to kick in 2006, so what's the hurry to pass this before Thanksgiving? Call Allard. Call Ben Nighthorse Campbell's office. It's www.senate.gov and also house.gov. And that's how you can find out where they are on email. Senate.gov, House.gov is how you do it. Or here are some numbers to call. There's a 303 number for Campbell, 303-843-4100. There's a 303 number for Allard, 303-220-7414. So let them know. I mean, it looks like it's a done deal, but still, respond. And one of you over the weekend, now this is going around the Internet. You never know for sure. But it sounds like it's got the ring of truth, so let me just tell you what they're saying. They're giving you prices per 100 tabs of drugs like Celebrex. 100 milligrams of Celebrex apparently cost $130.27 if you're buying them in the drugstore. The markup, according to this email thing, 21,000%. Claritin at $215 for 100 tabs. Is that true? The markup is 30,000%. See, I don't, you know, thank goodness, the only thing I take are vitamins, so I really don't know about this stuff. So you tell me, but that is a horrible, and the energy bill, the reason that energy bill did not pass, although the Republicans are going to go right at it again, I think, is that in the bill was a lot of pork also, and part of the bill, the MTBE that has required to be part of, an additive to gasoline, MTBE, has poisoned the groundwater in a number of states, including California. Seriously poisoned groundwater all over the country. And that energy bill prevented any suits against the MTBE manufacturers for any poisoning of the groundwater. So, hello, have you got that? So the pharmaceutical houses, the drug companies have all been protected in this Medicare, and the insurance companies have all been taken care of in this new Medicare thing that's going to happen. AARP sold out its membership, and I don't know how old you have to be. I guess maybe about 50. I don't think it's much of whatever it costs to join AARP. They sold out their members. Seniors do vote, and I really hope that they get so mad over this that they vote out this regime. So what is the hurry? The drug companies and the insurance companies got exactly what they wanted, and everybody else got screwed. And the Democrats went over to side, some of them went over to side with the Republicans on this. I think people got sold out. I would have liked to have seen wait for a better bill than jumping into the fire and going with this that gives one little crumb to one segment of the elderly. You know, I hope that Medicare is there for me when I need it, and I hope it's there for you when you need it, but it's not going to be there with this crew in helping to line the pockets of the richest, of the biggest companies, the huge corporate donors that they have. Aren't you outraged by that? I am apoplectic. Steam is pouring out of my ears. 303-382-1150. Ken, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid. Hi, Ken.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Do you know what this bill's all about, really?
Hmm.
What's the bottom line is, really? You know what I really, really...
Pork barrel medicine. But tell me what your point is.
It's about the middle class spending more money on elderly. That's what it's about. Do you know how many elderly need it? Do you really know? Do you know how much?
Ken, stop. This isn't. Ken, do me a favor. This isn't 20 questions. Tell me what your information is and tell me what your points are.
Look up what percent of the elderly need this. And let me preface that with, I'm all for giving the elderly 100% free health care. But you need to look at the facts and the figures as to who needs it, who doesn't, and why.
This is a really bad bill in every single way. It's filled with pork for the insurers and for the pharmaceutical companies. That's what this is about. Joni Onicell, hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, yeah. I really enjoy your program, first thing. And I just actually wanted to make one comment about what you were saying you read on the Internet about, like, Celebrex being marked up $30,000. Things like that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true because, you know, some of this Internet stuff is not always, you know, some of it's urban legends.
No, I know there's a huge markup. I was just thinking that $30,000 is probably actually the price of an actual manufactured pill, not all the research and R&D that goes behind it. So, I mean, if it's $30,000 up, maybe each pill actually costs, you know, 3 cents to make, which I would totally believe, which would be a significant markup.
Well, according to this, it's 60 cents to do 100 of them, of Celebrex.
No, but I'm talking about making, having to add back in all the years of R&D and the price.
I think that the drug companies should certainly have a fair amount of money for R&D, but when they start gouging us, that's when I really have a problem. 303-382-1150. And when this kind of legislation gets passed where it gives you one little crumb for a certain segment of the elderly and a lot of pork for everybody else and really is a Trojan horse that will destroy Medicare ultimately, I think it's a scandal. I am outraged by a kind of government that only wants to line its own pockets and the pockets of its cronies and let everybody else shift for themselves. Bruce, calling from Arvada. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hello, Enid. I'm a very conservative caller, but I think I finally found a common enemy with you on this drug bill.
I know a lot of conservative Republicans are not voting the party line here.
Yeah, there were 25 conservative Republicans in the House that voted against it. And there were a few that kind of got strong-armed there at the last minute, and they swayed their vote. But
these are guys that you better send a Cajoni building kit to, because they certainly don't have them on their own.
Well, I appreciate what you're doing right now, encouraging people to call their senators and let them know what's going on here. I'm real glad that you're doing that.
Have you called Bruce?
I haven't, but I heard you say that. I'm thinking about doing it right now.
Call right now, 303-220-7414. That's Allard. And then Ben Nighthorse Campbell, 303-843-4100. I'm sure you can find it in the phone book. They both have. And you can get it online, senate.gov and house.gov.
Okay, can I make a quick point that
yep.
you may not have thought of?
Yep.
You repeatedly hear this figure about $425 billion over 10 years. Well, the thing is, it doesn't really matter about the next 10 years because it's in 12 to 15 years when the baby boomers really start to retire en masse.
I know.
So it's the long term. I mean, this is going to result in a massive tax increase, and it's going to crush our economy. You know, we've already got a serious problem with Medicare the way it is, even without this bill. It's just a huge...
And what do you think
step.
About the bill that prevents the government from using its huge buying power to negotiate the best drug prices?
Well, I got to disagree with you on that point, because what they're really trying to avoid there is government-imposed price controls, and that kind of thing usually leads to shortages.
Well, that means everybody's going to go to Canada then for their drugs, because Canada's doing it, and there are seniors who have to choose between food and drugs, or food and medications, and that's what's going to happen. I thank you, Bruce, for the call. I hope you'll call again, 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150, KNRC. 12:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 42 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Pegasus Asthma Study. Air Force One has touched down at Peterson Air Force Base as President Bush comes to Colorado to visit Fort Carson. Bush is scheduled to make a few remarks and visit with some families of troops who are serving in Iraq. Some 27 Fort Carson soldiers have died in Iraq since the end of major fighting was declared in May. Police are still looking for the suspect who shot a security guard at the King Supers at 13th and Cremaria Saturday night. The security guard is still listed in serious condition. The suspect ran out of the store and is described as a black male, 5'8", and appeared to be in his 20s. A 15-year-old who died at Children's Hospital on Friday is the state's first victim of the flu this year. Officials haven't released the name or gender of the teen, but did say the victim had some other medical problems that complicated the patient's condition. More than 1,500 cases of flu have been confirmed in Colorado as of midweek. week last week. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche host the Nashville Predators tonight as the Avs wrap up their five-game homestand. If you're an adult with asthma, you're invited to see if you qualify to participate in a medical research study called Pegasus Asthma. To learn more, call toll-free 1-866-404-4447. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1239.
Out here, the checkered flag means someone's about to win. And right now, at participating Goodyear retailers, the checkered flag means all Goodyear brand tires are on sale. Race to the finish and save big on a wide selection of Goodyear's most popular tires. And when you buy four selected Goodyear tires, you'll get up to $75 cash from a mail-in rebate. For complete details, call 1-800-GOODYEAR or visit any participating Goodyear retailer. But hurry, because on December 6th, this offer and big tire sale is finished.
Anyone who gets heartburn knows how irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel really fast. I mean, the instant Maximum Strength Mylanta liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try Maximum Strength Mylanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
KNRC News Time is 1240. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Kleenex Tissue, and we got a bit of a problem southbound University at Dry Creek. Watch for an accident there. Southbound I-25 at Broadway have a bit of a struggle, too. Watch for that. That's going to tie things up in through the Narrows, so that'll be a bit of a problem. Like the news, travel fast with three germ-blocking layers. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues help stop the spread of germs. Thank goodness for Kleenex Tissue. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC Traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Looks like a nice day temperature-wise, about 45, pretty close to average. Into tonight, partly cloudy, down to 18. Partly cloudy and breezy Tuesday, 40 degrees. And Wednesday's a big travel day for a lot of people, and the only thing you'll have to deal with is some breezy west winds. Otherwise, partly cloudy, the high 41. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1241. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
All month, Ellen's been playing matchmaker for her assistant Jeff, with beautiful women competing for his heart. Next time, the dramatic decision. Who will Jeff choose?
Maybe you should go make out with each of them.
Plus, Ellen's guests Bernie Mac and Valerie Bertinelli. And Wednesday, it's Ellen's Thanksgiving special.
Woo!
And Ellen's Talking Turkey. With special guest Bette Midler and holiday cooking tips.
Never order turkey medium rare.
On The Ellen DeGeneres Show.
The Ellen DeGeneres Show. Today at 3 on 9 News.
Hey, Kirk, what are you doing?
Kim, I'm writing a jingle about 4 o'clock at 9 News, airing right after Ellen DeGeneres. Okay, listen. Today, after Ellen, we are telling all the news you need to know. And whether it's snowing or not. Watch 9 News, 4 o'clock, because we're telling you the news.
Kirk,
Ellen. What?
I like it. But before the big finish, you need the announcer to say, watch the Ellen DeGeneres Show at 3, followed by 9 News at 4.
After Ellen. This will never make it on the air.
Yeah, good luck with that.
KNRC Market Watch.
The greenback has made a comeback following last week's all-time low versus the euro. Analysts say the dollar's rise today is helping give rise to stock prices. Right now, the Dow is up 108 points. The S&P 500 is gaining 14. The NASDAQ is up 36 points. That's almost a 2% gain. Almost three of four issues listed on the big board are positive. Trading volume there, 840 million shares. Recent efforts by PeopleSoft to stave off a hostile takeover bid by Oracle have not worked. That's according to Oracle. The company says its plan to take over PeopleSoft is right on track. Right now, Oracle stock is gaining 17 cents. PeopleSoft is up 66 cents a share. As stocks slid over the past 2 weeks, gold futures rose to seven-year highs, briefly breaching the $400 an ounce mark. But as investors return to stocks today, gold futures slipped back to $392 an ounce. Again, the Dow is up 110 points. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Seniors, yes! HMOs, no! Seniors, yes! HMOs, no!
AARP is spending $24 million of your money to try to pass a prescription drug bill that privatizes Medicare and is going to force seniors and people with disabilities off of their current employer-sponsored coverage.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1244 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. We're talking about the Medicare thing that looks like it's going to make it through the Senate. It narrowly made it through the House. And I think the Republicans, listening to Tim McLaughlin's newscast, the Republicans have enough votes, but still in all, let Allard know, let Campbell know, call their offices, email them, let them know. This is a terrible, terrible idea. This is pork barrel medicine. Pork barrel medicine, no question about it. Howie, calling from Boulder. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. I'm Howie. I listen to you fairly often. I've been a family doctor for 41 years.
Uh-huh.
I happen to be an advocate for universal health care. I'm a member of Physicians for National Health Plan, and I agree with the things that you're saying, that, you know, the prices that we Americans and my patients have to pay for drugs is unconscionable. And I think all of the stuff that you're saying with Medicare kind of goes along with the general plan, which is leave no lobbyists behind.
That's right. And they're playing hardball with, here's what they did. I don't know if they did this with the Medicare. I think they may have. They certainly did this with the energy bill. They didn't let anybody see it until like an hour or two before it was going to be voted on. No time really to go through it. That's their tactic. And if you are lobbying on behalf of, it used to be that, that you could lobby Democrats and Republicans equally. You could lobby on both sides of the aisle. You can't do it anymore. This administration playing hardball. Only the money only goes to Republicans, not to Democrats. If they know that you're whoever you're lobbying for, you've given dough to the Democrats, they cut you out. So you're right. This is for the lobbyists. This is for the drug companies. This is for the insurance companies.
Well, the problem in our country, of course, is that the insurance companies are taking anywhere from 20 to 25% out of every one of our health care dollars we send them just for running their companies. No other country in the world has such a unique system. And we don't seem to understand that we could provide health care for all with less money than we're now paying per capita, and we would have a drug plan for everybody. It would be like Canada, where they would have buying power. The whole thing is to, you know, the lobbyists are being rewarded, and so are those companies making the unconscionable profits. As a matter of fact, somebody mentioned about R&D.
Yeah.
That's a small percentage of pharmaceutical spending. If you want to compare that to marketing and advertising, and you want to throw a little more in there, the CEO's salaries of those companies averages about $18 to $25 million a year.
Wow.
So that when, you know, they start whining about, oh, we put all this money in for R&D, don't believe it. I mean, there is some. Of course, the government, we taxpayers, help fund some of the R&D. There's so many inequities in our system that those of us who favor a universal health plan are saying, well, we have universal with Medicare right now. It's just poorly funded and poorly run. That doesn't mean it could work if it was better funded and better run. So I didn't know how much you know or you're involved with the movement for universal health care, but I think it's probably the most important thing that's come on the horizon for a long time. And for once, we have a majority of the American people actually favoring it.
All right, so how can we get involved in universal health care?
Okay, I'm sure glad you asked.
Tell me quick, because the lines are completely...
There's a website called healthcareforallcolorado.com.
Okay.
Physicians for National Health Plan, that's PNHP.org, I think it is. I think the first one is also .org. I think I said that wrong, but it's healthcareforallcolorado.org and PNHP.org.
Howie,
you'll find out a lot. And if you would, I happen to go around giving talks on universal care, and I'm available. I just gave an interview for KCFR, and so I'm available to either come on your show or do.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, and Joe Anderson will get some information from you. So let me do that, Howie. And I thank you very much for calling, and thanks for all the good information. And I hope you call us again.
Thanks,
Howie. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. Let's head over to Jerry calling from Parker. Hi, Jerry. You're live with Enid.
Hi. You know, there seemed to be a lot of ads from AARP right after this thing happened.
Yeah, and it was full-page ads, and they said, you know, it's not a perfect bill, but we're going to support it, and you should support
it,
too.
Right, and I just heard something on your station against it. I don't know if it was an ad or if it was just a record of something, but it was good. There supposedly is a connection between Reuters, the biggest, you know, the biggest publication set company, and SmithKline. It used to be SmithKline in French, but it's some other drug company.
I think SmithKline Glaxo.
Right, Glaxo. And it seems interesting that this country is ending up, you know, I mean, we're all taking so many drugs. I mean, you know.
They're marketing drugs. A lot of docs that I know are just furious about it because their patients come in and tell them what they want because they saw the ads.
Yeah.
And here's what the other thing that the drug companies are doing. They're turning things into diseases. For example, do you shop too much? All right, that's a disease and we have a pill for it. So.
Yes, exactly.
I know the antidote. I know the pill for shopping too much. It's more money. That's the only pill I can think of. All right, Jerry.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Well, I just think that meantime, it's a great big, the war is this a distraction, and we don't see what's going on with the forest bill that was just passed.
Michael Jackson is a distraction.
Everything. I mean, these little tabloids and so on that they put in the news. Yes, I agree, and that's why I'm really glad you're talking about these important issues, and I appreciate you doing that.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks.
Appreciate your call. 303-332-1150. Earl, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This thing must stink from the head down, because I listen to all the talk programs.
Mm-hmm.
All the conservative talk show hosts are against it. All the liberal talk show hosts are against it.
I can't believe that. You mean Rush and I are actually on the same page?
Yeah, and so this is really a bad deal from the way I see it. All the conservatives are against it because it's a big entitlement boost, and some of them even say it's a corporate bailout, so that major corporations that have retirees won't have to cover for prescription drugs, and also all the unions, which are lobbying to the Democratic Party, are going to be able to drop the people that they have. And it's just going to put government have more power over people.
It's also got Trojan. Paul Krugman said that there are all these Trojan horses built in that will sort of destroy the system down the line. I know it was a great system for my mother when she was alive, and for my aunts and uncles and all the seniors that I knew. And I thought, gosh, it's at least nice to know that when we hobble into our dotage, as we inch into our dotage, it might be there for us. But I don't know that it will be. And furthermore, I am outraged, just outraged, that the giveaways to the biggest and the richest are so flagrant they don't even bother to hide it anymore. It's just somebody called it pork barrel medicine, and that's what I think it is, Earl. And I thank you for the call. 303-321-1150. Ellie, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid.
Hi, Ellie.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm going to apologize for diverting a bit to an earlier subject, because I'm loving this conversation about healthcare, and I think Howie was great, and you should get him as a guest. But I'm calling about your comments earlier about the style section.
Yes.
I just wanted to give you a little feedback on what it's like to contact the editor and features editor with your comments, which they so invite in the paper. They really aren't ready to receive them. I wrote to them after the premier issue of the via email of the style section, in which, if you'll note, there was a large feature on soup. And my background is in food, and both Greg Moore and Ray Rinaldi know me. I'm the former executive editor of Cooking Light magazine.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote because I thought, as a lead feature, kangaroo tail soup was a bit obscure.
I know. I looked at that, and I thought,
yeah.
You gotta get it. Where do you get the kangaroo?
Maybe Costco. I don't know, but I knew.
I thought it was maybe a joke, a name for
a soup that was for
ordinary ingredients.
So did I. And then I thought, and I very well noted, and in my email I said this, you know, there was paren may substitute oxtails. And, you know, and with a cooking background, I do know that oxtails even aren't on everybody's, you know, mainstay shopping list.
Mm-hmm.
But it did say may substitute oxtails, and it wasn't a joke. And then the photo accompanying it was of the clam chowder right above it. So I thought oversight, premier week for the style section could have been more carefully edited. And then in the copy, they cited two local sources with delicious soups that they loved, and they cited Ruth Reichel, editor of Gourmet, and her favorite soup, which the recipe is available on the internet and in her book. And then, lo and behold, you get to the end of the story with your mouth watering for these soups, and all the recipes were pulled from the internet. The two sources locally, two notable Denverites who talked about their favorite soups, no recipe, and we got chicken noodle and kangaroo tail. So I fired off an email to Greg Moore.
Tell me quick, because we're just about out of time.
Who invited me to do so at any time, and Ray Rinaldi. And in a nutshell, I never heard from Greg Moore, and I talked to Ray Rinaldi by the phone, who said to me, quote, "I don't know who you think you are, a reader or a professional," and pretty much uninvited me to ever comment again.
Oh, Ellie, that's so distressing. This style section is horrible. For the second week, I thought the first time with the big thing on fur, and Ruth Reichel actually is somebody I've known for a long time.
Oh, yes.
And if anybody's just tuning in, we're talking about the new Sunday style section, which was opened to great fanfare. There was a lot of build-up about it, and it was going to be kind of like the Washington Post style section.
Please send us your comments. Remember that?
Yeah, it's hideous.
The little box that said, please send us your comments. Well, my word to all your listeners is don't bother, because they don't want to hear.
Ellie, thank you for this chapter in a depressing story.
You're very welcome.
We have to think of a new name for the style section besides stylist.
You know, I thought the second week, with a little fairness, I thought the second week with the turkeys was okay.
But there's no humor, there's no edginess,
there's no
wittiness, there's no real sense of style in the way that it's put together. And the full-color photo is just unlookable in this last Sunday's edition. I just about tossed it.
It's very lacking in imagination, but apparently, I think another factor is that some of these editors think that cooking is still for little blue-haired ladies with aprons on. They don't realize what a mainstream subject
and
food
how
is.
Yeah, and how hot
for example,
it is. I'm afraid we're gonna have to leave it here. We're out of time, and I thank you very much for the call. I'm Enid Goldstein, 303-382-1150, AM 1150, KNRC.
Soon to be the most listened to station in Colorado. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150, KNRC.
This week on Colorado State of Mind, our Emmy award-winning series debates when should teens be tried as adults, and should President Bush publicly mourn our war dead? This is Greg Dobbs, and on the first question, during a football camp, three high school boys allegedly sodomized freshman teammates as part of a hazing ritual. They'll be tried as juveniles, and if convicted, will likely get little or no jail time. They may even return to school alongside their accusers. Is this appropriate, or should they be tried as adults? What do you think? Join me and a panel of Coloradans Friday night at 8:30 for Colorado State of Mind, only on Rocky Mountain PBS Channel 6. Plus, President Bush has not attended any funerals for soldiers killed in Iraq. Should he or shouldn't he? Join the discussion online anytime at rmpbs.org, and be sure to tune in to Colorado State of Mind every Friday night at 8:30 on Rocky Mountain PBS.
Amazing, fantastic, incredible. If these aren't words you're using to describe your pain reliever, then isn't it time for PK5? It's not the same old stuff. PK5 is the most powerful topical pain reliever in the world. It stops the pain of arthritis, joint pain, shoulder pain, back pain, neuropathies, and many other types of pain. Advertising did not get PK5 to the top. Satisfied customers put PK5 on top because it works. Every day, people switch to the pain reliever with attitude. PK5. It's not your father's pain reliever. Icon Labs believes in truth in advertising. We do not alter, embellish, or stretch the truth. We don't need to. We simply say what users tell us. PK5 is used and recommended by doctors, pharmacists, national and world champion athletes who agree there is nothing as effective as PK5 for relieving pain. PK5 is available at Eckerd, Osco, Savon, Walgreens, and CVS pharmacies. PK5, changing the way the world deals with pain forever. Want to know more? Visit us online at pk5.com.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Are drugs affecting you, your family, or a friend? Narconon provides answers to drug addiction. They offer free assessment and referral services to over 11,000 treatment centers nationwide. For 30 years, Narconon has successfully used a drug-free approach to long-term recovery that works. They understand the cravings, guilt, and depression associated with addiction. To find out more about Narconon, log on to www.stopaddiction.com or call 1-800-468-6933.
Get to Kohl's at 5:30 a.m. this Friday morning for incredible early bird specials till noon only during Kohl's After Thanksgiving sale. Kohl's, give happy, get happy.
AARP, shame on you! AARP, shame on you!
is spending $24 million of your money to try to pass a prescription drug bill that privatizes Medicare and is going to force seniors and people with disabilities off of their current employer-sponsored coverage.
And now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
1259 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I was so sorry we couldn't talk to Ellie longer, but as you see, we're pressed for time. We're just about out of time in this hour. But two more hours of Enid coming right up on AM 1150 KNRC. The next hour, we're going to be joined by the English novelist Martin Amis. His new book is called Yellow Dog. You might have loved a previous book of his, as I did, called The Information. He'll be at Tattered Cover tonight, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. Don't you go anywhere. You're listening to Enid Live on AM 1150.
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 42 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Pegasus Asthma Study. President Bush has arrived in Colorado. Air Force One touched down at Peterson Air Force Base less than an hour ago. From there, the president headed to Fort Carson, where he's scheduled to make some remarks and also visit with families of troops who are currently deployed to Iraq. Nearly 12,000 of Fort Carson's troops are currently there. Since major combat was declared over in May, some 27 Fort Carson soldiers have been killed in Iraq. Budget woes are hitting Colorado community colleges as state lawmakers try to figure out how to balance Colorado's budget. Two-year colleges might start being consolidated to save money, or some might even have to close. There's no formal proposal yet to consolidate the community colleges, but state officials are saying the idea needs to be considered, especially if the schools are teaching the same subjects. The metro area has five community colleges, and a lot of students and instructors are against that consolidation plan. The jurors deciding the fate of Joseph Dowler are resuming deliberations today. Dowler is accused of first-degree murder in the death of his infant son. Two-month-old Tanner Dowler was abused so severely that many of his bones were broken before he died. At this point, the jury hasn't been sequestered, but the jurors have been instructed to not watch any coverage of the case and to not discuss it with anyone not in the jury. Dowler could face life in prison if he's convicted. Tanner's mother, Audra Tanner, is serving a 10-year sentence for child abuse. John Allen Muhammad's defense team is getting ready to appeal their client's conviction on murder and terrorism charges. Defense attorney Jonathan Shapiro feels there are a variety of issues.
But obviously the interpretation and application of the terrorism statute is one point that will be reviewed and addressed, as well as on the multiple killing, the trigger man issue, the definitions, the instructions that were given to the jury in that regard.
A jury today recommended the death penalty for Muhammad on both charges. The crimes were connected to the sniper shooting spree that took place last year in Washington, D.C. area, and formal sentencing is now scheduled for February 12th. The Senate is steaming toward passage of a controversial Medicare reform bill, possibly this evening. Supporters of the complex overhaul easily quashed a filibuster and moved the measure toward final passage today. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist called it an important step for 40 million senior citizens.
Prescription drugs, the tool which is the most powerful element of health care security today. Seniors don't have it. What we're voting on is to give them that true health care security.
However, New York Democrat Hillary Clinton called the Medicare measure a wolf in sheep's clothing.
That's what's going on here. You can dress it up and you can talk about how significant a benefit it's going to turn out to be and how we're modernizing and changing Medicare for the 21st century, but remember that fairy tale.
The nearly $400 billion 10-year overhaul adds a prescription drug element for senior citizens. It also creates incentives for private health plans to compete with Medicare coverage. With a strong push from President Bush, the House passed the measure in the pre-dawn hours Saturday. Bush is anxious to sign it. Beginning today, you and your phone number have more options. An FCC rule goes into effect, allowing customers to change their home phone number to a wireless phone or take their cell phone number with them if they switch carriers. The rule currently only applies to consumers in the top 100 most populated areas. Stretch and walk. While this sounds like typical health advice from your doctor, these suggestions have a specific purpose in mind. Millions of Americans will be flying the friendly skies or hitting the road during the Thanksgiving holiday. Economy class syndrome is the nickname for deep vein thrombosis, deadly blood clots that can occur when people sit for long periods of time. Blood is unable to circulate freely through the legs when they're stuck in tight areas, so they're telling you to stretch and walk on a regular basis. In sports, a tough loss for the Denver Broncos, who fell 19-10 to the Chicago Bears yesterday. Broncos head coach Mike Shanahan says he's responsible for this loss.
I didn't do a very good job getting our football team prepared today. I thought we had a great week of preparation, and I felt good about the game going into it. Very disappointed myself that we didn't play better than we did.
The Broncos head to Oakland next week to take on the Raiders. The Nashville Predators come to town tonight to take on the Colorado Avalanche as the Avs wrap up their five-game homestand. No game for the Denver Nuggets tonight. They'll be back in action tomorrow night at the Pepsi Center against the Phoenix Suns. If you're an adult with asthma, you're invited to see if you qualify to participate in a medical research study called Pegasus Asthma. To learn more, go visit goasthma.com. That's goasthma.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecaster up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
John Madden here to tell you about the Ace Hardware one-day sale happening this Friday, November 28th. Get a five-piece wooden tray table set with natural finish for only $19.99. Or pick up a three-pack of GE 28-inch lighted candy canes, free after $4.99 mail-in rebate. Find great deals like these at Ace's one-day sale. Doors open at 7 a.m., so make plans to shop early. Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
In a perfect world, your entire family would agree on what picture to use in the holiday card. And your family's card would be displayed front and center on everybody's refrigerator. But the world isn't perfect, and that's why there's Walgreens, where you get 20 photo greeting cards for only $14.99, and they're ready the next day. Well in time to make the holiday season picture perfect. That's life. This is Walgreens.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by Albertsons. Pretty quiet drive westbound 270 at Vasquez. You'll see an accident. That'll tie up I-70 as well. Doing a bit of construction over there, so watch for that for the next hour. C-470 at I-70, you'll see a bit of construction as well. Don't miss Albertsons Holiday 10 for $10 sale with Cool Whip stovetop stuffing, Libby's pumpkin, Albertsons cranberry sauce, and more. All 10 for $10. Albertsons, helping make your life easier. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Looks like a nice day temperature-wise, about 45, pretty close to average. Into tonight, partly cloudy, down to 18. Partly cloudy and breezy Tuesday, 40 degrees. And Wednesday's a big travel day for a lot of people, and the only thing you'll have to deal with is some breezy west winds. Otherwise, partly cloudy, the high 41. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And with me in the studio is Martin Amis, the English novelist. His book, his newest book, is called Yellow Dog. And you can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. He is a fabulous writer and a controversial writer. And a great favorite of mine, and I'm delighted that he could join us today. Thank you for coming in, Martin.
My pleasure.
You're going to have to talk very closely. Bring the microphone close to you and talk right into it. And we've alcoholed it, so no cooties extant can jump up and do horrible things to you.
All okay, right. Is that better?
It's a lot better. But I think why don't you just bring it closer to your... just bring it over. No, just see the arm here? We're going to just pull it over to you. There you go. Okay, doc. There.
Right.
Okay. It's a little bit obscene what we have to do here in the studio, but not unlike your controversial book that has to do with pornography and all kinds of and obscenities and beautifully written and very witty. So tell me about the book, the new novel, Yellow Dog. It's a lot of controversy about it. Why?
There are various routes you can go to explaining that. And the one I've settled for is that, Well, there are two things. One is a kind of personal beef that has to do with my father, Kingsley Amis.
Also a novelist, for those of you who don't remember. It's very unusual for father and son to be, shall we say, equally successful?
Yes,
let's say in the same trade?
Yes, let's say that. And I think some people subliminally believe that I was born in 1922 when he was born. But nonetheless, I wrote Lucky Jim, his first novel, when I was seven. And that I'm going to be around almost for a century. But the other thing is that this...
Well, it only feels like a century.
Well, it'll feel like a century to them, not to me. But the other thing is that I therefore have this sort of unconscious label as a genetic elitist, as if I was born with a full set of writer's genes and have just been lying on a hammock ever since. There's that. But I think it's really that my stuff is not, you know, light beer. It's not, there's not a glass of Chardonnay that Bush mockingly said the Clintonites love to drink on Martha's Vineyard. It's rebel yell, you know, it's hard stuff and not for all sensibilities. So it rubs you up one way or the other, either the right way or the wrong way, but it rubs you up.
What is the story of Yellow Dog?
Well, there are three or even four stories. The main one and the most realistic one concerns Zan Mio, who's a nice, modern, good, contemporary person who you know, has all the right views and is a 50-50 parent, good cook, talented masseur, a punctual lover with his wife, and so on. Then he gets hit over the head and becomes more or less the opposite of all that, as if a trapdoor has opened up underneath him and his personality changes, and he becomes a brute and a gorilla. And how this affects his marriage and his relationship with his two little daughters is explored. Meanwhile, there's a emanating out of sort of Los Angeles area, there's a kind of porno plot, a blackmail plot involving the royal family, the British royal family, and we have an alternative king, Henry the Ninth.
They want to install?
Yeah, and his...
In place of Brenda and her husband?
Well, I've installed them in place of them, but and the plot is directed against his 15-year-old daughter, Princess Victoria, and these things all come together.
So it has been, in one review, let's see, one reviewer says about the book, in an ethically deadpan way, it constructs a world of pornography, incest, sexual violence, and child abuse. Thoroughly repellent. Is that why the book is so controversial? Or could it be for other reasons entirely?
No, I think that's part of it. You know, my subject has always been masculinity, right from the start, right from 30 years ago.
Why has that been your subject?
I don't know.
Is this the thing that you're most interested in?
It's not that I spend any time thinking about it, but when I sit down to write, this is the preoccupation. I mean, you write about what you don't know you're thinking about or worrying about.
Do we, Martin, still have masculinity? I mean, does it actually still even exist? And I'm only being partly puckish here when I ask that question.
Of course it exists. And, you know, 5 million years of power, and that's what's been enjoyed by the man on this planet, do not disappear. The past has a weight. And we may think, I mean, you're being very puckish indeed if you think that all this has been sorted out. It'll take at least a century, if not three centuries.
I mean, I'm watching men who wear more jewelry than women. I am watching a more confused masculinity than there is a femininity now. In some ways, there's been a role reversal, at least in this country. But you're right. It doesn't, 5,000 years of it doesn't.
5 million years.
Or 5 million years of it.
Doesn't disappear. And men have been slightly crazed, in my view, by their losses in power. And women have been slightly crazed by their gains in power. What we seem to see all around us a great shedding of inhibition and constraint. But you can't snap your fingers and divest yourself of the past. And in fact, all you're doing is gathering up a whole new raft of innovatory uncertainties and anxieties.
So how do you see that the past will explode If you can't bury 5 million years of masculinity under fragrances and earrings and pierced ears and other body parts as well, what's going to happen? Is it going to massively explode in some untoward way or unexpected way?
No, you're dead right. An earring won't quite do it. It doesn't quite make it for 5 million years in power. But I imagine. I mean, it's awfully difficult to read, and what we see out there is a very contradictory culture. I think it'll just thrash around with various excesses on all sides in a completely unreadable way for many decades.
Until it sorts itself out,
which it has every chance of doing, but not for a long time.
But in your own life, here you are, the son of a storied and very celebrated father, Kingsley Amis, and you take up essentially the same line of work. Did you know you were going to do that, or did it come to you when you sit down to write? What you were saying earlier, you don't think about masculinity, but when you sit down to write, that's really what bubbles up, and that's what you start writing about, and that's how the plots begin to shape themselves in some fashion, I would imagine. Did you have in mind, or did it happen in the sort of the same way, that you were going to be a novelist as well? Are you going to write, or did you always think that you would, sort of the family business, or did it just sort of happen?
Well, I think, like everyone else, I thought I wanted to be a writer at the age of about 13. I think everyone goes through that phase. That's when you start to commune with yourself. You start to keep diaries and write poems, and you suddenly have this dialogue with yourself that you didn't have before. And that's like writing. But the writers are the ones who go on doing that. They never grow out of that phase. And by the time I was 21, 22, I was pretty determined that this is what I wanted to do. Depending on how the first one went, I would then write a second one. And I would have probably gone on in obscurity and written 3, 4, 5 novels, even without getting them published. I was that committed.
But you had family connections, so it would be likely that you would have the first book published, unlike somebody else who would have started cold.
Right. I did have that huge advantage that any publisher would have published me out of vulgar curiosity.
And Oedipal concern.
Indeed.
And so what happened when you wrote the first book, which was called?
The Rachel Papers. It did well, and it won the Somerset Maugham Prize. Just as my father won it for Lucky Jim. So I naturally thought this writing lark is a bit of all right and settled down into it. But just to underline the rarity of the case, you know, it seems that most children of writers write one or two books. And then whatever rivalrous, emulous emotions they had are then satisfied by that and they stop. But I did sort of know for sure that I was in it for the long haul.
But there is that whole Oedipal thing. There is that rivalry anyway between fathers and sons. And what I've seen in my observation, when the father has been extremely successful, the son almost never is. And so here you've broken that particular tradition. And I think there's always going to be a natural rivalry between fathers and sons, mothers and daughters. How did it play itself out in your family? What sort of a relationship did you have with your father?
Oh, very good. Indeed, when I wrote about that relationship in the memoir Experience, the response to that book made me realize that this is quite a rare thing for fathers and sons to certainly for writers' sons to get on with their fathers. So it balanced out in that way. But when I began, I think he was pleased and proud at first, and then began to get a little annoyed. But then...
Was his career holding up even at the... I mean, because careers typically have dips in them, long careers do. Was his dipping when you were on the ascendant, or were you pretty much always evenly...
He did have a dip, but then he came back very strongly and won the Booker Prize for his best book in his late 60s. So,
which was called?
The Old Devils.
The Old Devils. If you're just joining us, my guest is Martin Amis. His new book is called Yellow Dog. It's a novel, a very controversial novel filled with Well, according to one reviewer, pornography, incest, sexual violence, child abuse, but always filled with terrific writing. And you can meet him tonight at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30. So he was experiencing, but pretty much your careers tracked each other. Was he not married many times?
No, twice.
Only twice?
Second time to the novelist Elizabeth Jane Howard.
Okay. And you did not live with him, or did live with him until a certain time? At what point did you not live with him?
I lived with him till end of university, when I was 21, 22.
Oh, so.
So, yeah.
It wasn't that you were custody of the mom?
I know. I lived with him from the age of 15 onwards. And then after university, I would see him at least once a week and many weekends when he lived out of London. But there was a kind of turning point, I think, when he said he was at a party, and a woman came up to him and said, "How does it feel to have a son who's much more famous than you are?" And he said, "He isn't much more famous than I am." And she said, "Yes, he is. He's much more famous than you are." And he told me that and laughed a lot. And I think that was the point at which he relaxed about it. But I would say we were, had parity.
Well, I think that the competition probably infused and simulated both of what you did, both your writings, don't you think? Isn't that possible?
It doesn't sound
like it eroded the relationship.
It didn't. And it was a literary friendship as well as a father-son relationship. But I think it's much exaggerated, this rivalry between writers. And it's a category mistake, really, because we're not trying to write the same novels. It's not as if we're all trying to run 100 yards in 8 seconds. We're on different races, different tracks.
My guest is Martin Amis. The book is Yellow Dog. It is a novel getting actually wonderful reviews. I'm Enid Goldstein. You might have questions, 303-382-1150. You can meet him tonight, Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30.
Finally, Denver has a talk station it can be proud of. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC.
Hear ye, hear ye, and welcome to our royal celebration. Disney on Ice presents Princess Classics. It's the 7 most enchanting stories of all time, with all your favorite princesses, brave heroes, and funny friends in one amazing live show. Get Cinderella to the castle in time and dance at the royal ball. Dive into an undersea party with the Little Mermaid and Sebastian. Journey to the Sultan's castle and escape on a magic carpet ride with Aladdin and Princess Jasmine. Help brave Mulan fulfill her heroic destiny. And join Beauty and the Beast, Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty for a dazzling celebration of romance, fun, and adventure. Live in your hometown. Disney on Ice, Princess Classics. Get tickets today and let the happy endings begin.
Coming to the Pepsi Center, December 10th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at the box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, or call to charge by phone.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. It's common knowledge that household dust carries germs, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, pesticide, things you don't want your family breathing in. And when you realize that dust can be suspended in the air 8 hours before it settles, then you want a vacuum that traps the dust in the bag. You want a vacuum that cleans the air in your home as it cleans your floors. You want a hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL. A hypoallergenic Orrick features a 7-stage filtration system that traps over 99.99% of particles 250 times smaller than the width of a human hair. When you turn on a hypoallergenic Orrick XL, there's never a cloud of dust in your face or a foul odor. Call 1-800-989-4200 for free literature or a free 30-day home trial. That's 1-800-989-4200. It's a vacuum designed with your well-being in mind.
You know, the thing about winning awards is that you have to say award-winning this and award-winning that. And frankly, it's very tiring for a voice talent like myself.
Here's your mic high, sir.
Thanks. But just in case you didn't know, you can download clips of award-winning news features and guest interviews from our award-winning website, made by an award-winning designer featuring award-winning hosts. Well, it's true. KNRCRadio.com has it all. But if somebody at the station wins a Nobel Prize, I'm out of here. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
1:23 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and with me in studio, Martin Amis, the celebrated English novelist. His new book, Yellow Dog, you can meet him tonight, and it has been controversial. It's gotten good reviews, but it's also gotten some controversial reviews as well, as some of his work does. And you can meet him tonight, Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, at 7:30. So when we last left each other, Martin, we were talking about your relationship with your father and talking about writing. Talk to me about the writing process as it works for you.
Well, as you get
older, because I think when you're setting, it's not like you're both literary men, but you aren't making identical widgets. Whatever comes out comes out, and sometimes you don't have as much control over it. It's something that comes from some other realm, I think. But talk to me about how it works for you.
Yeah, you're dead right, and it's little understood how mysterious, how shamanistic the whole thing is. As you get older, you learn to you learn that writing is a more physical thing. It's not cerebral. It's also at least as physical. For instance, if you come up against a difficulty in a novel, you know, in the old days I would have battered my head against that difficulty until I'd exhausted myself and usually made no progress. Now I obey my feet that take me away from my desk. I obey my ass, which says, sit down on this easy chair, and I obey my hands, pick up a book. You begin to obey the body. And then after a day or two of not going to your desk, you find that your feet have brought you there again. And the reason is that the difficulty has been solved by your unconscious, not by your hammering conscious brain, which can't get you through these things, but by some little chemical reaction in the spine, and you've seen the answer to your problem.
You've gotten into a lot of problems in the past with fellow novelists, with the literary establishment. You have ruffled many feathers. Is this something that you set out to do, or is this just something that happens because you're writing what you're writing and people respond to it as they do?
Well, I haven't. I don't think you could say that I initiated any controversies with any other novelist. It's always been come at me the other way.
Well, they hammer on you.
Yeah.
Why? Why do you think that you evoke that in people? Or in critics?
Well, this is the genetic elitist stuff, which is so against the culture.
Meaning?
Well, I'm the son of, and therefore it also, you know, Ponzi voice, went to Oxford. You know, I've been kind of outflanked by the culture in that I'm now seen as a sort of Mandarin, where I was an iconoclast when I began. But the culture has shifted that much on its axis that I'm now the obvious figure to attack if you're an iconoclast. And my stuff...
Do they call you elitist?
Yeah.
They do that here.
Yes.
Because we've become so mediocre that if you went to a good school, if you were well-read and well-spoken, you're an elitist.
This is divisive to do that. Yeah. Well, I mean...
Well, it's a way of shoring up the mediocre. It's a way of dissing what is really fine and good.
I know, and it's curious that America should have gone that way, because America always totally committed to liberty, quite keen on fraternity, but never shown much interest in equality. And yet the culture hammers this into us that you don't want to look, you don't want to stick out, you don't want to be excellent, you don't want to be prominent. Meanwhile, individualism is as rampant as it ever was. So very contradictory culture. Anyway, my stuff is seen now as de haut en bas, as if I'm talking down to this new generation of readers that don't want that from a writer. What they want is a sort of 50-50 across the table, collegiate, you know, I'm okay, you're okay. No one wants to be made to feel inferior while nurturing great dreams of superiority.
And fame. Mm. So, I want to get back to a couple of things. You're talking about, you're writing, masculinity comes up. What observations can you make about masculinity in this time that we haven't discussed? because somehow these two threads of the conversation are connected. You being the son of a very successful writer, Kingsley Amis, you're sitting down, masculinity just bubbles up when you're when you sit down to write, so clearly some concern at some level. You must have many observations to make, and somehow I see the masculinity issue connected to that this is a becoming a more mediocre society, that if you are talking from on high, or if you have are very smart, or you unless you package it exactly right, you will be scapegoated, you'll be an object of criticism. Somehow I think that's it's connected with the masculinity, although I can't say how exactly. But any observations you want to make about these?
Well, in the mid-19th century, de Tocqueville, the French travel writer, said that America would eventually become so democratic, its democracy would become so flabby and woozy, and everyone would be so equal that no one would dare open their mouths because being offended would become the kind of national pastime.
Victimization. It's a mainstay of the law now. It is a profit center in the law, victimology, and in academe. So he was prescient.
Incredibly prescient. But also the corollary of that is that that humor itself will become narrower and narrower in this country, I think. There'll be an underground humor and an overground humor. But in public discourse, humor will be edged out because a joke is, by definition, politically incorrect. It assumes a butt. It assumes a certain superiority. And this will be anathema to the culture. And so you have the terrifying prospect of
no humor, of a life without humor. And it is almost true in America, here, we are suffering from an irony deficiency.
That's right. And it can only get worse. But, I mean, it's the same it will be true in England, too. We're just half a generation behind you. There's a sort of chilly, humorless voice emerging now. And you know, when you have an illusion, you pay the price for it. And this illusion that we're all equal and my emotions are just as important as Shakespeare's and Beethoven's is all very well. And then a few years later, you realize that they aren't as important as Shakespeare's. And you snap out of it into a kind of chilly, slightly embittered realization that some people are more talented than others.
All right, so here you are. You're looking at us from the side of England, where you're saying England is a half a generation behind the U.S. Where are we now? If you were describing, I mean, George Bush, I think, is tragic, and he's certainly an example of somebody who grew up with every advantage, but his whole persona is I'm just a kid from Midland, Texas, kind of a, you know, bring him on, he said. That's what he said.
No, it's we're going to take him out and bring him on, and this trash language he uses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's religious as well. I mean, it's a horrible mixture of
a lethal combination, I think.
Of piety and power. And many of the greatest crimes in history have been, answerable to that combination.
Such as? Who comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the religious wars and ideological wars that have, you know, ravaged our species from the beginning. I think the blanket anti-Americanism that you find in Europe, I think, is no help at all. I was against the war in Iraq, but the minute the boot hit the ground, I'm 100% behind it. I want it to succeed. I want them to find weapons of mass destruction. I am with the coalition now because there's no turning back. It's been such a huge throw of the dice. In England, you see people with, you know, get out of Iraq. That is an absolutely disastrous thing to believe. I don't think that the war was rational or legal. I think America was still in shock after September the 11th, reeling around looking for someone to hit. It had to be an Arab country. And
it had to be easy.
Had to be easy. And it had to have, and this is the only encouraging, hopeful thing, it had to have an enormous ambition of remaking the Middle East. The trouble is it reeks of ideology, though, and that's why they've been so surprised at every turn, because human nature does not conform to the template of ideology.
So if you were looking into the tea leaves or the crystal ball, what do you see happening? It looks horrible from right now. It looks like a very not very well thought out occupation. If we could just declare that we've won and come home, I think some people would like that very much. Camille Paglia, I don't know if you ever read her, she said, just come home, it's not worth one more life. We can't do that. I don't see how we can do it. But
no, you can't possibly do
and
that.
You've alienated some of your oldest deepest allies. The coalition of the willing, I think, is one, is Great Britain. That's it, the UK.
That's right, but he squandered
it. Maybe a little Bulgaria and some of
Poland.
And Poland.
No, he squandered half a century's worth of political goodwill. But that's one more reason why this has to work and why Iraq cannot now be abandoned to civil war and chaos. But he has to learn...
George W. Bush, meaning.
Yes, has to learn some humility and to think of the way he was talking and the way he was walking a year ago.
But he's an insecure man, and people fill him full of things. He's a weak man. Who knows that any of this has anything to do with any of his ideas or whether he was hot-walked into all of it? I mean, you're talking about him as though he had an actual plan and an ideology and anything. I think he was a blank slate with a good name, and Karl Rove and people like Karl Rove thought they could run him up to the presidency. His own parents were amazed that he made it as far as he did. On almost no credentials, the thinnest of credentials. A man who'd been a drunk and a flop until he was 40 years old.
I know his handlers have done remarkably well.
That is the most brilliant thing they've done. Everything else, I think, is incompetent. But the ability to sell him a man who was AWOL from his own National Guard service, and then they have him flying into that deck of that USS Abraham Lincoln like Tom Cruise in a flight suit with a sock stuffed down the front of his pants. I mean, that was just a mission accomplished. Wow.
He was on a rush. I mean, he's a male just like the ones in my book. And, the paradoxical vulnerability of masculinity is visible in him. Where you boast of your potency, but there's always that doubt.
But if you're really that strong, are you boasting? I think the strongest people don't go around boasting. I don't think they have to.
No, I know, and that's why it was a terrifying sight to see both Rumsfeld and Bush clearly nuts on this huge accession of power. And now they're getting, the tab is being presented.
It's a very high tab.
It's a high tab.
And if you were looking into what was going to happen, what's going to happen? Are they going to reshape the region? Are we going to get stuck there? Is it quagmire like Vietnam?
Well, what frightened me is...
Is it a magnet for all kinds of terrorism, which everybody who's covered the region in advance of going to war said that this would function as a recruiting poster for Osama bin Laden and that whole crew?
Well, it looked to any disinterested eye that you were shooting your foot off by this venture. But what's happened is that dozens of possible futures are now milling in the air above Iraq, and it will be a usual mix of happenstance and chance and expediency to see which of those futures settles down on that land.
Martin Amis, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been my great pleasure. The new book is called Yellow Dog. It's a novel. You can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30. I think you'll have a fabulous evening if you go. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Monday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 1:36, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 43 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Northwest Parkway. President Bush is in Colorado for a visit to Fort Carson. He's meeting with troops and families of those who are currently serving in Iraq. Fort Carson has sent nearly 12,000 soldiers to Iraq, 28 of which have died since Bush declared major combat ended in May. Meanwhile, more Colorado Army reservists will be headed to Iraq to serve for about a year and a half. More than 50 Army medics will head to Fort Carson in a couple of weeks for training. After 7 to 12 weeks, they'll be deployed to Iraq. Three men in Weld County died, apparently as a result of carbon monoxide poisoning over the weekend. Their bodies were found Saturday morning in a pickup parked in a garage in a subdivision east of Longmont. Investigators say the men appeared to have been intoxicated. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche are in action tonight at the Pepsi Center against the Nashville Predators. Tonight's game wraps up the Avs' five-game series. Don't fight traffic this holiday season. Take the number one way to get through the holiday rush. The Northwest Parkway is now open. Visit nwpky.org and learn how you can ride free this season. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:37.
Needless to say, I was anxious to be 110 miles offshore and jumping off a boat in the open ocean.
Jim Ray is a marine biologist who has been working with a national marine sanctuary called the Flower Gardens, deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Flower Garden banks are a very unique set of reefs. About 55% of the surface area is covered with living coral.
And while his work is not surprising, what might be is who he works for, Shell.
Just gives me a very different view and approach on the environment. Yeah, it has become an old friend.
Protecting this magnificent area is something people like Jim have been doing for over 30 years.
With this kind of protection, it'll probably be there 100 years from now for people to still enjoy.
And while Shell will continue to focus on energy, that will never be its only focus.
As long as I'm still allowed to dive, and I'm not too old to climb back on a boat, I'll probably have the opportunity to go back to places like the Flower Gardens.
To find out more, see the Shell report at www.shell.com.
KNRC News Time is 1:38. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Heritage for the Blind. Really one problem around the metro area, northbound I-25 at Dry Creek. It's on the ramp. Watch for an accident down there. We also are seeing some congestion, just too many cars, not enough road on the tech center heading northbound on I-25. Don't sell it, don't trade it. Call 1-800-2-DONATE and donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Call 1-800-2-DONATE for hassle-free pickup. 1-800-2-DONATE or visit taxdeduction.com. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Becoming partly cloudy this afternoon. Looks like a nice day temperature-wise, about 45, pretty close to average. Into tonight, partly cloudy, down to 18. Partly cloudy and breezy Tuesday, 40 degrees. And Wednesday's a big travel day for a lot of people, and the only thing you'll have to deal with is some breezy west winds. Otherwise, partly cloudy, the high 41. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 43 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
We co-host Style Matters Live on AM 1150 KNRC. You know that we know great shopping. That's why for this holiday season, we'll be at Aspen Grove on Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton.
You got that right. Aspen Grove is an open-air shopping center. Park right in front of great stores like Pottery Barn, Coldwater Creek, Talbot's, and Chico's. It's an urban feel in the heart of suburbia with 7 great restaurants. No food court food here.
Aspen Grove has stores you'd find at any mall, plus a few wonderful exclusives like the Carol Lee Adrian Vitadini shop, the new Italian department store Camille La Vie, and White House Black Market.
He will buy an outfit in white, and then I'm going to buy the same one in black. I heard that. For the holidays, Aspen Grove has free carriage rides. Have the whole family sign up for the gift registry. Make sure everyone gets what they really want.
Aspen Grove is located on Santa Fe at Mineral and Littleton near the light rail station. Open Mondays through Saturdays 10 to 9 and Sundays 11 to 6.
You can't top Aspen Grove, where life meets style.
KNRC Market Watch.
Nice way to kick off what is traditionally a positive week for Wall Street. Winning stocks outnumber losers by more than 2 to 1 at the big board. And the Dow Industrials are rallying 111 points inside the final hour of trading. NASDAQ is up 42 points. The S&P 500 now ahead by 15. Analysts tell us the markets are bouncing back from last week's losses thanks to strength in the dollar, which fell to an all-time low against the euro last week. Dollar up about 0.8% against the euro today. Investors feeling more upbeat about the economy. That word from brokerage UBS, whose index of investor optimism hit a 20-month high this month, as investors express confidence in both the economy and short-term investment goals. Investors clearly not too worried about shady dealings at mutual fund companies. Research firm Lipper says investors added nearly $24 billion to U.S. stock funds in October, even as stories of improper fund trading unfolded. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150. We hear you. 303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
1:42 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and if you're just tuning in, you missed a really, I think, a wonderful chat with Martin Amis, who is a novelist. And we were talking, we got into the area of politics in Iraq and so on, and as I'm looking at my monitor in the studio right now, CNN, here is President Bush. He's right here in our backyard. He's at Fort Carson. And Fort Carson is the place where that soldier who was shipped back from Iraq, He was going to be charged with cowardice after what he described was a panic attack. He saw a man who was just bloodied and mowed down in half, cut in half because of the bullets, just cut the man's body in half, and he was just oozing blood, and it was just horrible. And apparently a lot of soldiers have that response the first time they come into it. But they knocked the charge down from cowardice, which could have resulted in his death. He could have been put to death for cowardice, to dereliction of duty. And he says that he and other soldiers from Fort Carson took a malaria drug in September before leaving for Iraq. And he this guy who was going to be charged with cowardice, his name is Pagani, he's an interrogator. He said he saw this mangled body and that left him vomiting and shaking and ugh. But he thinks that maybe it was something with this drug. Its warning label on the drug says that in rare instances, the drug can cause paranoid and psychotic reactions, anxiety, and other neuropsychiatric side effects. Excuse me. So I'm just thinking about that because here is President Bush, and he is talking to the soldiers at Fort Carson. And you know what? Listen to this. I just have to share this story with you. We know that President and Mrs. Bush just came back from their stint at Buckingham Palace. But here's what you don't know. He trashed the place while he was there. I'm not making this up. At least this is what's being reported in the Sunday Mirror. The headline is Ground Farce 1. And here's what they're reporting. The Queen is allegedly furious with President George W. Bush after his state visit caused thousands of pounds of damage, in other words, thousands of dollars of damage to her gardens at Buckingham Palace. Royal officials are now in touch with the Queen's insurers and with Prime Minister Blair to find out who's going to pick up the massive repair bill. The palace said that they had never seen the Queen so angry as when she saw how her perfectly maintained lawns had been churned up after being turned into helipads with three giant X or H landing markings for the Bush visit. The rotors of the President's Marine Force One helicopter and two support Blackhawks damaged trees and shrubs that had survived since the reign of Queen Victoria. And apparently, it gets worse, Bush's army of clod-hopping security servicemen trampled more precious and exotic plants. The Queen's own flock of flamingos, which security staff insisted should be moved in case they flew into the helicopter rotors, are thought to be so traumatized after being taken to a place of safety that they might never fly home. They might never return home. The historic fabric of the palace was also damaged as high-tech links were fitted for the U.S. leaders and his entourage. And his entourage was 600 or 700 people or 800, something like that, including 5 or 6 people to do his own cooking. I guess it was one report I saw, 5 or 6 chefs, so that, in case someone would be trying to poison him, or I don't know, so that he could do Tex-Mex at the palace? I mean, I don't know. But that was one story I saw. Anyway, the palace's head gardener was reported to be in tears when he saw the scale of the damage. The Queen has every right to feel insulted at the way she has been treated by Bush, said a palace insider. The repairs will cost tens of thousands of pounds, so a pound is worth what? A dollar and a half, $1.70? I don't remember. I haven't been to England in a while, but so tens of thousands, so almost double that. But the damage to historic and rare plants will be immense. They are still taking an inventory. The lawns are used for the royal garden parties, of which I once attended one at Buckingham Palace, as a matter of fact. A small, intimate gathering of between about 4,000 and 6,000 people the year that I attended. And are beautifully kept, but 30,000 visitors did not do as much damage as the Americans did in 3 days. Their security people and support staff tramped all over the place and left an absolute mess. It is particularly sad because the Queen Mother loved to wander in the garden just as Queen and Prince Charles do now. Some of the roses, flowers, and shrubs damaged are thought to be rare varieties, named after members of the royal family and planted by the Queen Mother and the Queen. Other royals had their own favorite parts of the garden as children, and some of these areas have been damaged. The Queen's insurers have told her she is covered for statues, garden furniture, and plants she personally owns, but the bill for repairing damage to the lawns and the structure of the palace will probably have to be picked up by the government. The Americans made alterations to accommodate specialized equipment. The massive gadgetry meant the royals could not get a decent TV picture during the visit. So I guess thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of damage. Do you think that the White House ought to offer to pay for it? Seems to me that they ought to if they damaged those gardens. 303-382-1150, 303-382-1150. And when they were toasting each other, the Queen gave her toast, noting that unlike presidents, she was not term limited. The President smiled. Prince Charles did not smile. When the Queen finished, the President raised his glass, President Bush, but Her Majesty did not return the gesture, instead waiting for the American National Anthem to begin. Hearing the music, Bush put down his glass. In other words, he didn't know the drill, so he was raising his glass at the wrong time. So now he puts down his glass, he puts his hand over his heart, then he takes it off his heart, then he puts it back on his heart again. The Star Spangled Banner was over, then he clinked glasses with the Queen, and then turned to clink glasses with Princess Anne, who was already sipping from hers, so she kind of dissed him. The awkwardness continued after Bush's toast, when he again picked up his glass to clink with the Queen, who stood motionless, and probably expressionless too, waiting for her own national anthem. Bush put his glass back down, and as the orchestra played, God Save the Queen, winked at somebody in the audience. Finally, the anthem finished. President and Queen consummated their clinks. So there he is, Bush. Bush in England, they trampled up the gardens, and he didn't get his clinks right. Now I guess he's barking at us from Fort Carson, where we have that one soldier who believes that it might have been the shots that he received that caused him to panic. And I don't know if you saw, finally, we're seeing evidence of it in the Post. There was a story about it last week in the New York Times. You were seeing the horrific injuries that our soldiers are coming back with. We have only speculated what they could be. But here's a man who is without a leg. You see people without, you know, who leave three of their limbs or more there who will never be the same. I mean, it's just crushingly sad to see these horrific injuries. And I'm not sure why we're there. Maybe you can explain it to me. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
A station built by Coloradans for Denver and Colorado. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquid Gels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquid Gels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquid Gels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquid Gels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquid Gels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Taste and health. You want both in one cranberry juice? You want Northland.
Northland has a kick to it. I like that.
It says 100% juice on their label. That tells me it's healthy.
Cranberry raspberry, cranberry grape. I love all their flavors.
Northland. A great taste and the health benefits of cranberry. Only Northland has 27% cranberry in all nine of its 100% juice cranberry blends.
I choose Northland because it fits my healthy lifestyle.
Northland. 100% juice, 100% refreshing.
I love the holidays, but it's such a race getting ready. The shopping, the cooking, the planning.
This year, take a few minutes to do something special just for you. Give yourself the gift of Botox Cosmetic. Botox Cosmetic Botulinum Toxin Type A. For more information and to find a physician near you, visit BotoxCosmetic.com.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
Don't wait till the holidays have come and gone. Before the parties and get-togethers with family and friends, give yourself the gift of Botox Cosmetic.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
The Jefferson County Department of Health and Environment offers a full-service international travel clinic. The clinic provides immunizations and prescriptions, as well as health advice and information associated with traveling to specific areas of the world. If you're traveling internationally, protect yourself and call the travel clinic 4 to 6 weeks before your trip at 303-239-7020 to schedule an appointment. That's 303-239-7020.
Don't miss Albertsons Holiday 10 for 10 sale. With Cool Whip, Stovetop Stuffing, Libby's Pumpkin, Albertsons Cranberry Sauce, and more, all 10 for $10. Albertsons, helping make your life easier.
Talk to Doug Kellett.
There's more good economic news. I keep thinking that for those who are really hoping that Bush doesn't win re-election in 2004, there are a couple of things I guess have to happen for this to probably occur. And one of them is the economy can't turn it around. And I'm just wondering, what are you going to do now? If things start doing well, Well, if your stocks start doing well, what's going to happen? For those of you that want Bush to bite the dust in 2004, do you have to root against maybe an economic recovery?
Doug Kellett, weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
152 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. What we were talking about earlier is this whole Medicare debate, and it probably will pass, although it's not too late still. You have to make the gesture, even if it's utterly meaningless. You want to get a hold of Senator Allard, and you want to get a hold of Ben Nighthorse Campbell, and you can look up their numbers in the phone book, although I have them. And you can reach them online, www.senate.gov. www.senate.gov is how you can do that. And let them know this Medicare thing is horrible. It is just the worst thing. It's going to destroy Medicare. At least that's what some people who are smarter than I am and have more of an economic background. Paul Krugman certainly believes that. Conservatives don't like it either because they think it's too much money. What I don't like about it is that there has been no attempt. In fact, they've made it illegal for the government to use its vast purchasing power in order to rein in some of these costs and get the best prices available. So that who has really made out like a bandit here are the drug companies and the insurance companies. They're going to do very well. And except for a few seniors who are really poor and get some little benefit out of this, everybody else is going to be screwed, essentially. So it's pork. It's been called pork barrel medicine. And that's what it really sounds like to me. And I am just furious that this is going to go forward and that you had senators like Feinstein, Ron Wyden, people that you wouldn't expect to jump over with the Republicans on this one doing it, so that it looks like it's going to pass. But still in all, let Allard and Ben Nighthorse Campbell know of your opposition, assuming you're opposed. I mean, here the energy bill did not pass, and Republicans are talking about when they're going to, you know, go at it again for the energy bill. And part of the reason that energy bill did not pass is that there was a provision in there to absolve any of those companies that had anything to do with MTBE from any lawsuits at all. And MTBE, an additive to gasoline in California and other states, has poisoned the groundwater of a lot of states. California, big time, big time. Poisoned the water supply. And so now these companies that manufacture or produce MTBE, they are going to be exempt from any kind of lawsuits in that energy bill. And I think that was a deal breaker for a lot of legislators. So that didn't pass. In every, I don't care where you're looking, in every single aspect of this gang, this regime in Washington, all they want to do is line their pockets in the pockets of their friends, their lobbyists, their supporters. And as for the rest of us, it's screw you. It's flip the bird time. It's, you know, you do it on your own. You know what? If you are really an American, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Hey, we don't want you sucking off the government's, you know, we don't want you sucking off the government's breasts. For whatever you get. Never mind that their salaries are all paid by the government. Never mind that I think they did a study. The myth in this country is great wealth is created by people, inventing things or producing things or, you know, doing something entrepreneurial. In fact, most rich people get rich is that they've inherited their money. So somebody in the family made a lot of money and they inherited their money. And if George W. Bush would have to rely on his abilities to make a living, he better be grateful that he's got a government job, because if it weren't for his family's connection, he could be living in under a bridge somewhere, because he did very poorly. Maybe his wife would have to be working as a librarian for which she was trained. But he had family connections and family money, and as he flopped from one thing, he went into another thing and flopped from that and flopped at every single thing except getting himself elected. But for you, for me, any of the benefits that we might have hoped to get, we all hope that Social Security will be there when we need it. No, we all hope that Medicare will be there for our loved ones even now. But this whole thing that they were pushing through before Thanksgiving, because they know everybody wants to get home for the holiday, And that's an added impetus. Also, they were putting these bills through, like energy and Medicare, with no giving legislators maybe an hour to look at what's in the bill. You can't see what's in that bill looking at an hour or two in advance. So a lot of people, even a lot of Republicans, were bent out of shape over that kind of manipulation. So look at everything they do. It's to enrich themselves and their friends, and not very much for the rest of us. And I don't see how you can profess to love this country or support it when what you're doing is trying to gut government. You want to gut the excess of government. You want to gut what is not working. But to line your pockets at the expense of everyone else. And then it's a brilliant move to get the people who will benefit the least, who will be used in this process, who are just, whether they're cannon fodder in Iraq and they're coming back without their limbs and without their minds and without their nervous systems, brain damaged, physically damaged, damaged in ways that are incalculable, incomprehensible, horrific, whether it's those people or whether you are talking about the people who benefit the least from these programs. The brilliance of this administration is in convincing them that they have the most to gain. Isn't that amazing that they've been able to do it? What does that say about us? It says we're almost too dumb to breathe, that we are allowing this to happen. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. But you can call Ben Allard, or Wayne Allard, or Ben Nighthorse Campbell. And if you want to call Senator Allard and say, don't do this, good luck. But do it anyway. Gandhi said, anything you do is insignificant, but it is very important that you do it. So for Senator Allard, the number 303-220-7414. That's the Denver office. And for Senator Campbell, 303-843-4100. 303-843-4100. One of the questions I want to ask you is this. Howard Dean, it's now coming out. You know, he did not serve. His brother was killed in Vietnam, not because he was around the world trip, not that he was fighting. But now Howard Dean, who avoided Vietnam because he had a back problem, now says, well, he might have been able to serve. Should that be an issue now, 30 years after the fact, or 40, whatever it was? Should that be enough to stop his progress or to in any way impede him as he makes his way as potentially the Democratic candidate for president? What do you think? Is that a valid thing to discuss now, or is it old news? 303-382-1150. We'll be talking about that and a lot of more as we continue. One more hour of Enid coming up right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
KNRC 1150. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Partly cloudy, 43 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the Pegasus Asthma Study. President George W. Bush is in Fort Carson this afternoon addressing soldiers and families of soldiers fighting the war on terror. Bush started his speech by praising the efforts and history of Fort Carson fighting units.
For more than 60 years, the units of Fort Carson have been known for training hard and being prepared at all times. Men and women have poured from this base to make history, from the Pacific Theater in World War II to Korea, Vietnam, and Desert Storm. Our veterans and military retirees played their part in maintaining the greatest fighting force in the world. They kept our country free, and we are grateful to the veterans who are with us here today.
The president's visit comes as news of another Fort Carson soldier that has died in a skirmish in Iraq. That death raises to 28 the number of Fort Carson soldiers killed in Iraq. Bush told the crowd American troops are holding terrorists accountable for their actions and that the war will help make the world a safer place. Police in Westminster are looking for a man believed to have stabbed a woman in her home this morning. Police spokesman Tim Torres says the victim was able to call for help on her own.
A female called in and stated she had been stabbed in her residence and the suspect had fled. When officers arrived, they did determine that a female had a wound to her abdomen. So we began a search for the suspect and immediately locked down the two schools that were in the area.
Nearby Rocky Mountain Elementary and Sunset Ridge Elementary were locked down for about an hour as police searched the area for the suspect. According to the victim, the suspect fled the scene in a car. It's not known what, if any, relationship the victim had with the suspect. The suspect is described as a black male with short hair, possibly balding. He was last seen wearing a dark brown or black jacket with blue jeans and hiking boots. If you have any information, contact police immediately. Police continue looking for the suspect who shot a security guard at the King Supers at 13th and Cremaria about midnight Saturday. A surveillance camera caught the shooting and shows the suspect going to the counter where the guard, 52-year-old Kareem Al-Subi, was standing. The suspect pulled the gun and Al-Subi tried to grab it. The suspect fired the gun multiple times before fleeing the store. Al-Subi is in serious condition. The description of the suspect isn't very detailed. He's described as black, 5 feet 8 inches tall, and appeared to be in his 20s. The family website of John Hessler says the former University of Colorado quarterback is out of a coma as of Friday. The site also says he is responsive with his eyes open and can follow commands. Hessler has been in a coma since October 19th when he was driving his car and was hit by an SUV, then spun and was hit by a pickup truck. The SUV owners have disappeared. Ricardo Anchondo Gomez and Olga Huerta abandoned their home and never went back to work. The sheriff of Montgomery County, Maryland, is reacting to a jury's recommendation that John Allen Muhammad be executed for his role in last fall's D.C. area sniper shooting spree. Ray Kite says he's pleased with the sentence.
He received the death penalty, and that's the law in this case, and I support that law. He should be put to death, and the sooner the better.
Montgomery County saw more murders during the sniper spree than any other county. Last week, the jury found Muhammad guilty in the shooting death of a Maryland man, Dean Myers, at a Virginia gas station. The U.S. Senate is steaming toward passage of a controversial Medicare reform bill, possibly this evening. Supporters of the complex overhaul easily quashed a filibuster and moved the measure toward final passage today. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist called it an important move that will benefit roughly 40 million senior citizens.
My own state of Tennessee, there are nearly 250,000 seniors who right now have no prescription drug coverage. There are millions more all across the nation for whom this legislation literally means life or death.
But some conservatives, like New Hampshire Republican Judd Gregg, called the Medicare overhaul a budget-busting measure.
This bill is the largest intergenerational tax increase in the history of this country. It is a massive tax increase being placed on working young Americans and Americans who haven't yet been born.
The nearly $400 billion 10-year overhaul adds a prescription drug element for senior citizens and creates incentives for private health plans to compete with Medicare coverage. In sports, the Denver Broncos fell to 6-5 yesterday as they lost 19-10 to the Chicago Bears. This was the fourth loss in five games for the Broncos. The Broncos next take on the Raiders in Oakland. It's the Colorado Avalanche versus the Nashville Predators tonight at the Pepsi Center. This is the end of the Avs' five-game homestand. And it's a night off for the Denver Nuggets. Tomorrow night they'll play the Phoenix Suns at the Pepsi Center. If you're an adult with asthma, you're invited to see if you qualify to participate in a medical research study called Pegasus Asthma. To learn more, call toll-free 1-866-404-4447. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Do you want a warm, comfortable home? Of course. But what are you willing to pay in electricity? How about the same amount as used by a 100-watt bulb? That's what you get with a Carrier WeatherMaker Infinity gas furnace with Comfort Heat technology. Add in what WeatherMaker Infinity saves you on gas, and it's the most totally energy-efficient gas furnace you can buy, based on GAMA-DOE data, with a variable-speed fan that distributes warmth over longer cycles, eliminating drafts and hotspots. WeatherMaker Infinity, it's the most totally energy-efficient gas furnace in the universe. Besides the sun.
Hi, I'm Mike Galloway, president of Best Air Heating and Cooling Systems. Fight back against rising energy costs by installing a high-efficiency Carrier furnace in your home. You'll save up to 50% on your gas bill, and with financing up to 12 months same as cash, you can start saving today. Don't settle for less than the best. Call Mike at Best Air Heating and Cooling Systems, 303-487-8500.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of Kohl's, and got a bit of a problem northbound I-25 at the stadium curve, really tying up both sides of I-25 there. They've got it over to the right shoulder, but it's still going to be a bit of a problem, so watch for that. Putting the finishing touches on an accident northbound I-25 on the ramp to Dry Creek. Get to Kohl's at 5:30 this Friday morning for incredible early bird specials till noon only during Kohl's after Thanksgiving sale. Kohl's, give happy, get happy. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Colleen Swales with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Partly cloudy skies this afternoon, high temperatures around 45. Into tonight, partly cloudy down to 18, and then about 40 degrees on Tuesday, partly cloudy and breezy. Big travel day on Wednesday. We'll find some breezy west winds, but a nice day overall. Partly cloudy, a high of 41. For the Weather Channel, I'm Colleen Swales on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's partly cloudy, 43 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now, the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And in this hour, there are a lot of things I want to get to. I'm going to be off on Wednesday. Arnie Grossman, I think, is going to be filling in for me. And then on Friday, Jerome Davis will be filling in for me. Thursdays, we're all going to be having best ofs. So you'll be able to hear some of our best shows on Thursday on Thanksgiving Day. It'll keep you company as you are on your way to grandmother's house or someplace for your turkey or preparing your own turkey or being married to a turkey. I don't know. It just depends. First of all, Dick Cheney is named the interim. I want to be the first to announce this, that Dick Cheney has been named interim king of pop. He's sporting a sequin glove on Meet the Press, moving quickly to fill what it termed a dangerous power vacuum. The White House this weekend appointed Vice President Dick Cheney to the position of interim king of pop. This is the Borowitz Report, of course. Well, Michael Jackson, no surprise here, on his website, he is proclaiming his innocence. He's saying that it's predicated on a big lie, not just a lie. It's a big lie that this is predicated on, his difficulty. Well, Newsweek is reporting that the young boy in question who has accused Michael Jackson of sexual molestation, turns out, here's what Newsweek has uncovered, that he was in a Hollywood hospital, laying in with a tumor in his belly and a death sentence on his head. The doctors apparently gave this kid 2 weeks to live, said the owner of a comedy club who had befriended the boy and his family when a social worker referred them to a summer camp that this comedy club owner runs for underprivileged children. Hoping to boost the boy's will to live, the comedy owner made a deal with him. He said, start eating and build up your strength, and I will introduce you to any star you want. So the kid, who was dying, made a wish list. He wanted to meet Chris Tucker. He wanted to meet Adam Sandler, and he wanted to meet Michael Jackson. Well, the comedy club owner was able very easily to get Tucker and Sandler, but he didn't know exactly how to reach the king of pop. So he said, I called everyone I knew to see if anybody knew Michael. Eventually he got the letter, the number for the ranch, and eventually he got somebody there and he told the story. And he said, look, this little boy's plight is going to be on the local news tonight in connection with a blood drive that the comedy club owner had helped to organize. And maybe somebody can watch and tell Michael about it. And if Michael wants to call him and make him feel better, I would certainly appreciate it, said the comedy club owner. And he was kind of begging. Okay, all right. Well, all right, there you go. 3 years later, the comedy club owner might be wishing he had never made the call, because after surviving his fight with cancer, the boy, who's now 13, is facing another epic battle, this time as the alleged victim in the sexual molestation case against Michael Jackson. According to sources, the boy claims that Jackson molested him on a number of occasions during his visits to the ranch. One of the sources says Jackson served the boy wine. Jackson's friendship with the boy was first revealed in that British documentary that aired last February, in which the two appeared to be holding hands and talking about how the boy and his younger brother had slept in Jackson's bed. Everybody insisted that there was nothing sexual about these visits. The boy's mother came forward to defend the singer, and so on and so on and so on. Okay, big lie, he says. Garagos told the media throng that Jackson insists the boy's allegations are, quote, a big lie. The accusations, however, Newsweek goes on to report, are strikingly similar to those brought a decade ago by another 13-year-old, except in one significant respect. The latest accuser is not suing for money. In the case of that 13-year-old 10 years ago, the kid was suing for money. This one is not, so that's a distinction to remember. Though his mother, according to a family friend, has been in contact with the same lawyer who represented the plaintiff in the 1993 civil case, she and her son opted instead to cooperate with Santa Barbara County District Attorney, the same one who was in place in 1993 and was thwarted against any charges against Jackson because of the huge settlement reported to be in the neighborhood of $14 to $20 million that Jackson settled on the kid. So here was this DA who himself has about 9 children. He went to Notre Dame. He has been, I think, gunning for Jackson ever since. So anyway, he was thwarted when that boy in the 1993 incident settled his civil case with the singer for a reported $20 million and declined to cooperate in any criminal probe. The law was subsequently changed so that I don't think this boy can do what that last boy did legally. But this time, this little boy is willing to take the stand, giving the DA the ammunition he needs to charge Jackson with multiple counts of lewd and lascivious conduct with a minor. Moreover, California legislation was changed in the way of the settlement in 1993, making it now more difficult, if not impossible, making it more difficult but not impossible for alleged child abusers to arrange big money settlements that could short-circuit criminal prosecutions. While the 45-year-old Jackson has acknowledged that he allows children to sleep in his bed, he's denied having any sexual contact with minors. He's not the only one, however, coming under attack for his parenting skills. The accuser's mother has been widely criticized for allowing her children to stay alone with Jackson at Neverland. Last week, a lawyer for the ex-husband pledged to help his client regain custody of the children, claiming that the mother was negligent. And then furthermore, it is alleged that the mother has coached the children in the past to make untrue statements in legal cases, once in a slip and fall suit against a chain store, and later during her acrimonious divorce battle, which began a couple of years ago. The mother's been in seclusion and could not be reached for comment. But the father, who is now trying to get custody of this kid who says he was sexually molested by Michael Jackson, the father has his own credibility problems. In 2001, he pleaded no contest to a charge of wife beating and was sentenced to attend domestic violence counseling. The following year, he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of willful cruelty to a child in an incident involving his daughter. In a court filing seeking a restraining order against him, the mother claimed that instances of violence in her marriage were a daily occurrence. Little wonder, perhaps, that Neverland, with its carnival rides and soft-spoken, childlike proprietor, seemed like Eden. In fact, Jackson's fantasy land has been crumbling from the inside for some time now. Even as he was playing host to the young cancer patient, he was scrambling to fend off his creditors who wanted to repossess his beloved carnival rides. According to a lawsuit filed against him last year by an investment advisor, his net worth, once as high as about $750 million, had shrunk to $300 million. And by late 2000, the singer had borrowed $200 million from Bank of America, secured by his half-partnership with Sony, that owns, among other things, publishing rights to more than 200 Beatles songs and so on. So in any event, his album, his 2001 album, Invincible, cost about $30 million to make, and only sold about 2.1 million copies, strong for most artists, but less than a tenth of what Jackson's 1982 Thriller sold domestically. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that an amazing set of details in the Michael Jackson case? I just thought you would be interested in that. Okay, let me ask you this question, and I brought it up earlier. If you were just tuning in, we've been talking about Medicare. We've been talking about what a bad bill that is, how it's going to undermine the whole program, even if you're not a senior. You want it to be there for you when you get to be a senior, don't you? Just like Social Security, wouldn't you like to have that in place so that you're not blindsided when you get to be that age? So even though you're not a senior, this is a horrible bill. And once again, another example of pork for the richest and a few crumbs for those who are most in need. And it looks like it's going to pass, but you can still register with Wayne Allard or Ben Nighthorse Campbell. Register your feelings about this bill. Let them know that you're not in favor of it, because maybe by some miracle it won't pass. But the energy bill didn't pass because there was a provision in there to absolve the producers of MTBE from any financial damages, any lawsuits resulting in the fact that MTBE has poisoned the groundwater in a lot of places. So here you have, they call the energy bill the Hooters and Polluters Act, because Democrats and Republicans from states facing the billions of dollars in costs for cleaning up water contaminated by MTBE objected to a provision that would shield manufacturers of the substance from product defect lawsuits. Critics also called the bill the Hooters and Polluters Act, a reference to the legal protection for MTBE producers, and a provision on the bill that would provide $2 billion in tax-exempt green bonds to help fund energy-saving projects such as an entertainment center in Louisiana that will include a Hooters in it. So the Hooters and Polluters, and you could add looters to that whole designation. Howard Dean did not serve in Vietnam. He didn't serve in Vietnam because he had back problems, and he was able to bring in x-rays and medical evidence to the fact that he had back problems, and so he didn't have to serve. He was exempt. It's now come back to haunt him. He's now saying, you know, he might have been able to go, but nobody who could do it went in those years. Should it be an issue now? 303-382-1150. Do you think that it should be an issue 30 years down the line, when in fact it's a whole different time and place now? Is it a proper subject for discussion? And should it be a mark against Howard Dean that 33 years later the draft becomes a topic? Does this even matter now? 303-382-1150. You have a president who was in the National Guard, which is another way to avoid getting yourself shot up in Vietnam. And he didn't even show up a lot of the time, at least the last year or so of his duty. So is it anything that you think will take off and have legs as we get closer to the coming election? In the winter of 1970, a 21-year-old student from Yale walked into his armed services physical carrying x-rays and a letter from his orthopedist, eager to know whether a back condition might keep him out of the draft. This was not an uncommon scene. You know, in that time period, to keep him going to Vietnam, guys faked being gay, because that would keep him out of the service. They faked being psychotic. They faked having mental problems. Anything they could do to keep them out of going to Vietnam, they would do. And some people just took off for Canada. Now Dean is saying he might have been able to serve. And apparently his back condition, he went skiing afterward, although, you know, Rush, who said he had a bad back, was able to play golf, I don't know. And he did a lot of jobs, supplementing his trust fund with odd jobs like pouring concrete in the warm months and washing dishes when it got cold. So the question is, could he have gone, and should it be significant now? There's also information that John Kerry's people were overheard plotting in an Iowa hotel bar that they were going to have their candidate ride more motorcycles, cultivate protester credentials. And they're saying that a lot of Howard Dean cash is coming from Republicans. Now, I don't exactly know whether that is a plus or a minus, or exactly what the details are. The campaign advisors of Kerry's apparently spoke frankly at a hotel bar and were overheard talking about the state of the White House race and their frustrations of living in the shadow of Howard Dean. All of Dean's money is coming from Republicans, one member of Kerry's kitchen cabinet told the group. Another advisor asked if that had been researched. No one had an answer. Do you think that Dean's money is coming from Republicans? In other words, do they believe he's the guy that they can beat? Or is it that Republicans are so disgruntled they would like to see Dean in there? Apparently, Karl Rove said a long time ago that he thinks that Howard Dean is the guy who could be beaten. Do you think that's still the case? I was just thinking, I had a really awful thought over the weekend that George W. Bush could get reelected again because nobody will have the courage to, or Ralph Nader, who's considering a run all over again, but nobody will have the courage to step in and really put their money where their mouths are. Although George Soros, that's the best news, is committed to getting Bush out of there and his group. Because I don't think we'll have a country left as we know it if you have four more years of this regime in Washington. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. Also, the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms took possession of the Judiciary Committee's four computer servers on Friday and formally opened an investigation into how more than a dozen memos written by two Democratic senators ended up in the hands of a pair of newspapers. Democrats suspect that the memos had been, I don't know whether they think somebody had hacked into those computers or what, but those were memos about what the Intelligence Committee was going to do, what Democrats on the Senate Intelligence Committee were going to do. So those servers have been taken possession of, and there's an investigation that has been launched. There's a poll out, and this surprises me, that is showing support for same-sex marriages. Two new polls released Sunday show Massachusetts lawmakers could be bucking serious public opinion if they try to thwart the Supreme Judicial Court's ruling last week that found the state's ban on gay marriage unconstitutional. 50% of Massachusetts residents that were surveyed for this poll said they agreed with the ruling, while 38% opposed it. So in Massachusetts, apparently these polls are showing support for same-sex marriages. And I don't know if you've discovered David Brooks, but he's a conservative, and he's very interesting to read. He wrote a book that I thought was dead on called Bobos in Paradise. And he is now a columnist for the New York Times. And sometimes I don't agree with him, but he did an incredible column over the weekend on why we should support same-sex marriages. This is from a conservative. And I thought the reasoning was really good. So I will share that with you as we continue. Where are you on the issue of Howard Dean? Should the fact that he got a deferment because of his back from serving in Vietnam be an issue now 33 years later? Do you think he has a chance to beat Bush? Is his money coming from Republicans because they think he's the one to beat? And gay marriage, 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
We don't have to call San Antonio or Atlanta to get permission like some Denver stations do. Local talk, both sides, AM 1150 KNRC.
Frankly, it's difficult to imagine that a breed of men as fierce and warlike as the Scots ever learned to embrace the niceties of a civilized life, much less advance them. I mean, there they were, traipsing around the wee glen in nothing but their bagpipes. And next thing you know, they've invented distilled liquor. Now it's Sean Connery, the Highland Games. Why, they're even making stained glass right here in Colorado. Beautiful stained glass. Extraordinary, really, that everyone can appreciate. Even men like myself. Real men, who don't feel the need to toss around telephone poles in a pathetic attempt to compensate for the notion that their forefathers wore skirts.
English swine. Hi, this is Martin Faith, owner of Scottish Stained Glass. If you want to make a unique statement in your home, think leaded glass. It's private, beautiful to look at, and surprisingly affordable, with prices starting at just $145, including installation. For a free in-home consultation, call us at 303-766-3811. Holiday gift certificates are now available. 303-766-3811.
You're listening to the sound an angel makes. An angel visiting the Salvation Army's website at salvationarmyusa.org. It's an easy way to buy a toy for a needy child or set up your own red kettle where friends can help those in need this holiday season. Make a donation to our new online Red Kettle and Angel Giving Tree programs at salvationarmyusa.org.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
AM 1150 KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Doyle used the argument of saying only the Republicans in the legislature don't understand what husband and wife means, but apparently the justices of the Massachusetts Supreme Court don't understand what that clear language means either, because they just legalized it.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:25 on the Monday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. We're talking about a bunch of things. Should it matter that 33 years after the fact, Dean said he had a bad back and tried to get out of the draft and did make it out of the draft? And should that be an issue now in his presidency? Are we over that? It's a different time. It's a different place. And look who we've got in the White House now. Somebody who also avoided service in Vietnam in a different way and even didn't even show up for the National Guard duty that he was supposed to show up for. So should it be an issue now? 303-382-1150. Of course, I think no. And here's David Brooks writing in the New York Times, and I was so surprised to see this, and that in the column is called The Power of Marriage. He's a conservative, but he's very interesting. He makes very fascinating observations in his book, Bobos in Paradise. Read it. It's about every yuppie you ever met in your whole life. It's a fascinating kind of a sociological, but it just reads very well. I have it, and it pulled me right in. I thought it was good. Anyway, he starts out this way. Anybody who has several sexual partners in a year is committing spiritual suicide. He or she is ripping the veil from all that is private and delicate in oneself and pulverizing it in an assembly line of selfish sensations. Wow, this is what he's beginning with. But he says marriage is the opposite. Marriage joins two people in a sacred bond. It demands that they make an exclusive commitment to each other and thereby takes two discrete individuals and turns them into kin. Few of us work as hard at the vocation of marriage as we should, he writes, but marriage makes us better than we deserve to be. Even in the chores of daily life, married couples find themselves, over the years, coming closer together, fusing into one flesh. Married people who remain committed to each other find that they reorganize and deepen each other's lives. They may eventually come to the point where they can say to each other, "Love you, I am you." Today, marriage is in crisis. Nearly half of all marriages end in divorce. Worse, in some circles, marriage is not even expected. Men and women shack up for a while, produce children, and then float off to shack up with somebody else. Marriage is in crisis because marriage, which relies on a culture of fidelity, is now asked to survive in a culture of contingency. Today, individual choice is held up as the highest value. Choice of lifestyles, choice of identities, choice of cell phone rate plans. Freedom is a wonderful thing, but the culture of contingency means that the marriage bond, which is supposed to be sacred vow till death do us part, is now more likely to be seen as an easily canceled contract. Men are more likely to want to trade up when a younger trophy wife comes along. Men and women are quicker to opt out of marriages, even marriages that are not fatally flawed, when their, quote, needs don't seem to be met at the moment. Still, even in this time of crisis, every human being in the United States has the chance to move from the path of contingency to the path of marital fidelity, except homosexuals. Gays and lesbians are banned from marriage and forbidden to enter into this powerful and ennobling institution. A gay or lesbian couple may love each other as deeply as any two people, but when you meet a member of such a couple at a party, he or she then introduces you to a partner, a word that reeks of contingency. You would think that faced with this marriage crisis, we conservatives would do everything in our power to move as many people as possible from the path of contingency to the path of fidelity. But instead, many argue that gays must be banished from matrimony because gay marriage would weaken all marriage. A marriage is between a man and a woman, they say. It is women who domesticate men and make marriage work. Well, writes David Brooks, if women really domesticated men, heterosexual marriage wouldn't be in crisis. In truth, it's moral commitment renewed every day through faithfulness that domesticates all people. Now listen to this. This is very interesting. Some conservatives may have latched onto biological determinism, men are savages who need women to tame them, as a convenient way to oppose gay marriage. But in fact, we are not animals whose lives are bounded by our flesh and by our gender. We are moral creatures with souls, endowed with the ability to make covenants, such as the one Ruth made to Naomi, where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. The conservative course is not to banish gay people from making such commitments. It is to expect that they make such commitments. So here is his argument in favor of gay marriage, and he's a conservative, that what we need is not more contingency, you know, leasing with an option to buy, that we're all renters here. What we need is more fidelity, semper fi, as they say in the Marine Corps. And you can only get that if you allow people to marry, even if they are gay. He says you want to expect that they make these commitments. We shouldn't just allow gay marriage. He says, listen to this, we should insist on gay marriage. We should regard it as scandalous that two people could claim to love each other and not want to sanctify their love with marriage and fidelity. When liberals argue for gay marriage, they make it sound like a really good employee benefits plan, or they frame it as a civil rights issue, like extending the right to vote. Marriage, writes David Brooks, is not voting. It's going to be up to conservatives to make the important moral case for marriage, including gay marriage. Not making it means drifting further into the culture of contingency, which, when it comes to intimate and sacred relations, is an abomination. Now, this is coming from a conservative. Aren't you amazed? And isn't that an interesting argument? 303-382-1150.